Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, that could have been a lot worse than it was. We're back on the air, but my whole screen, I've got to sort of rebuild. My computer froze about 7 minutes before the show started, and I tried to restart it, and it wouldn't restart. And of course, I'm pinging buttons, and it's getting confused, and all kinds of other stuff is happening. None of my windows are open, but I think the mail program hasn't opened yet. So we're going to kind of would do what I normally do in a situation like this, just kind of talk and push buttons at the same time. Gina, you there? Let's see if we've at least got that part of the show working.
I am, but I'm still trying to log in on my computer. I wasn't getting any voice, so hopefully now I will be when I do it again.
Okay. Well, yeah. So this is the bane of our existence. It's the disadvantage. It's the yang. It gives us the ability to reach all around the world and can shut us down, you know, at a moment's notice. It's really kind of an interesting thing. All right, so looks like I've got my windows are starting to appear. Obviously not in the order that I put them in, so it's gonna be a little bit of a searching thing to find. I got my mail program. We got that going. I'm missing something. Let's see what's going on. Okay, we're about that in a little bit. All right, so we're going to do what I do. Like I say, we're going to rise here a little bit. We've got a while, so if anybody wants to join us, 215-383-3832 is the number to call in here. We've got our live chat, which we haven't done for a while. I haven't had anybody. We used to have a bumper jack. We would check in all the time, but that hasn't happened yet. So if you want to do our live chat, the way to do that is to look for on our broadcast page where the live chat is, and you just get yourself a free account and come join us. All right, so you can be the first to start that. I think Gina on that in a little bit. But as far as things go today, Alan's not going to be able to join us either. In fact, Alan down in Belize has suddenly gotten busy with his tour biz because it's now tour season down there. And so he won't be here, and Chappie's not going to be here either. He's shooting petition. So Chappie does the last half hour. So as you know, it's funny, Gene, every time I worry about not having enough time to go over the issues and kind of chat about stuff, you know, because we have so many reporters, all of a sudden something happens and people are not here. And so we get all the time that we want to be able to do stuff like this. Okay, now where is... Let me see. So that's working. There's something missing. I'm not quite sure what it is. Something just doesn't look right on my screen. So we'll see what we have going here. Well, let me see. All right, because a lot of these windows are combined. So let's hope that the windows that I picked will actually open up and get going. Anyway, first thing I want to talk about, this is kind of fun. I like to start some of it fun before we get into the heavy stuff. Cousin T was on One American News with Dan Ball, I guess, last night. But they had the repeat was on at 4 o'clock this morning. See, my computer, you know, crapped out at 4 o'clock. I've been fine. I just restart it. It's a bit of a problem, but... it's nowhere near as bad as, like, you know, 7 minutes before showtime. Anyway, so Cousin T is on, and I think Gene would contact Cousin T at some point and see if we can get him on the show here too. But he's growing in popularity. He's getting death threats too. This is something I didn't know, is that Cousin T, because he's a black making pancakes, you know, it's like he's the new Aunt Jemima. And of course, the leftist, I think it's mostly leftist white people, seem to have a problem with black people engaging in commerce and having their face on things. And they're all getting really bent out of shape about this. But Cousin T doesn't care. He's selling pancakes. He's having a good time. Dan Ball ate pancakes right there on the news. They look pretty good, too. Of course, I'm like, you know, I'm a no-carb guy right now. So I look at pancakes from a wistful distance, you know, sort of a longing, like, gee, I remember when I used to be able to eat those things, too, before I decided the carbs weren't good. But, yeah, Gina, I know you're busy. I don't know if you have a chance.
He is eventually probably going to have a gluten-free pancake mix up, but he's doing his other ones first. But he's had death threats, oh, my God, for years because he supported Trump. That's not nothing new. I mean, it's really sad what they – just because he's black, they think he's, like, not black because he doesn't act like a black. And what I mean by that is he doesn't condemn Trump.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's interesting right now. It's like, I've thought for at least a couple of years now that it's black conservatives that are really, you know, save the Republican Party from the old white geldings, because you've got a lot of and the younger folks and the women that are coming to the party, because they are much more active. They believe in America first. They don't have you know, the rank and privilege and established stuff and the committee chairs. And quite frankly, well, they want the committee chairs, but they don't want the privilege. They don't want the trappings. They're there to actually do something and then go home. You know, they're much more in the tradition of our early founders who, you know, fought the war and then went home to their farms, you know, went to Congress, you know, legislated for a few years and then went home to their businesses. You know, it's a very different thing than the Mitch McConnells, the Chuck Schumers, you know, the Brandons, whose job is government. And so it's a very different thing. So this is actually really encouraging, you know, to see this happening, but especially black conservatives, you know, and I don't know who hates black conservatives more, black liberals or white liberals. I haven't really decided yet. Maybe it's both, but it's a very strange phenomenon in this country that the people that, you know, preach equality and civil rights the most are the most oppressive, most segregation, most probably in favor of slavery and the plantation. It's like projection mentality. And it's not getting any better. And Cousin T, the guy wants to make pancakes. Who cares? And what happened to Aunt Jemima? They played a skit with Saturday Night Live. Did this skit with who played Aunt Jemima and a guy who played Uncle Ben. It was hysterical. Played Uncle Ben's rice and Aunt Jemima's pancakes. You know, and of course, who they've forgotten, who they always forget, is the Indian, the Land of Lakes. You know, Land of Lakes took the Indian maiden off all their packaging too. And of course, when Dan Skyhorse was here, and I hope to get him back next year. I'm talking to Dan. Hopefully, we'll get the Creek Tribe report back. You know, and sometime early next year. But he's saying, look, they do the same thing they always do. They steal they kill the Indian and keep the land. You know, so we haven't heard about her. She's not even the Indian. I guess probably she didn't have a name or whoever it was didn't seem to make it. So, you know, it's fascinating. So the blacks get persecuted and the Indians get killed. This is America. It hasn't changed, you know, and it's really scary. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. So if you get a chance to get a hold of Cousin T, let's see if he wants to back Action Radio. We'll back Cousin T. See if we can do something with that. Are you a pancake eater? I haven't had pancakes much since I was a kid. It seems like a kid thing more than anything else.
I'm not much of a pancake eater, but to tell you the truth, I had gluten-free ones earlier this morning.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So I guess for someone that doesn't want the carbs, does gluten-free make a difference? Is it the gluten that is the problem with...
Yeah, they're keto. They're keto-friendly, meaning that it's with things that, yeah, don't have your spike your insulin and have the regular flours in them.
Okay. So is it the gluten that breaks down into the sugars and the starches and things? I mean, in other words, is it – because that's the problem with carbs, like wheat products and things like that. You know, is it the gluten that's the problem?
I don't know a whole lot about it. I would say yes. But the thing is, when you use regular flour nowadays, regular flour is crap compared to years ago. So,
yeah.
You know, that right there is not a good thing.
Yeah,
but there's many ways
for
people that follow the keto diet, many ways to make awesome pancakes using just even, which is really weird, eggs and cream cheese. And they taste almost exactly like a crepe. Actually, I like them better than the regular crepe.
That sounds interesting. Well, I like cream cheese anyway. There again, you've got you know, a large amount of fat. So, but I'm sorry, I'm going to try a theory at some point here as I get closer to my ideal weight, whether, you know, I can eat what I want and exercise more, and then will that balance it off? So I'm hoping to burn more calories. I always remember Michael Phelps, the Olympic swimmer, his diet was like 3 loaves of bread a day, you know, 5 steaks. You know, I mean, he ate just, he ate like 5,000 calories or whatever, or maybe probably more than that.
You know,
yeah,
I really
but he burned it off.
A lot
yeah.
has to do with our blood type.
Oh.
And what foods are best for us. I really do believe that, because some people
okay.
say, you know, vegan or vegetarian diet works best for them. Others say, no, they can't do that. They almost died on that. They say this diet works best for them. Others say just everything in moderation. It's like, I think you have to know what one feels best for you. But also, and I mean, not, oh, you had a whole pie. Oh, that feels best for me. No, I'm talking what makes your brain think clearer and stuff like that. And I know from working with the kids, when
mm-hmm.
they're doing, or when we recommended gluten-free for them, if they had one cupcake in a period of time, I mean, let's say you didn't eat anything and then you had that one cupcake. After that, it could take you 6 more months to clear that that cupcake out of your system and get them back on track, because some people do not respond well to it.
That's interesting. You know, it's weird. When I have something that's, fattening, a really big meal, it doesn't show up on my body for like 2 days. It's the weirdest thing. You think it'd be gone by then, but I actually gain weight later, like 2 days later. And is that the metabolism, or is that just the way it is? I mean, I don't think it's 6 months later I still have the effects, but certainly I notice that it's not right away. It's not that night. It doesn't go instantly into, extra weight. Is that how metabolism works?
Everybody handles things differently. I know someone that usually doesn't eat gluten, and as soon as they eat it, they can tell. But me, it's not so obvious. You know, it really isn't.
You've got a tolerance for it, so it's okay. Yeah. I think we all do, too.
Yeah.
But when I'm eating a lot of when I used to eat, like, large calorie items, I didn't notice as much because my body was used to it. You know, but I was maintaining way too much weight.
It's different, too. Huh. I really do. I think when we're younger, it's much different. But
yeah,
I think as the years have gone by, so much processed stuff. I mean, even if you go to a restaurant, how many restaurants actually make true cooking from scratch? Or does it come in a frozen container or, box or something?
No, the good restaurants do. The good restaurants still do that. You know, they'll actually make their own bread sometimes. You know, the really good restaurants will make their own bread. You know, but I've sort of stayed away from the bread anyway. It's like my cruise ship philosophy. If you're going to go on a cruise and you don't want to gain weight, don't use the elevators, and don't eat the bread. So if you can stay away from bread and elevators, you know, you're going to be – and walk. You know, if you have to walk six flights, you know, up and down several times a day, you know, there's your exercise. There's your aerobics, you know, on a cruise ship. So use the stairs and don't eat the bread, and you'll be a lot better off. Yeah, it's fascinating how all this how this stuff works. Like I said, with pancakes, yeah, someday. But I want to make sure I'm going on a 25-mile bike ride, you know, within a couple of hours of that, just to sort of counteract the effects of it. All right, that's the first thing.
But I want to say had his, because I ordered his pancakes because I wanted to support him, and I thought they were great.
Yeah.
And so did my family.
Is there like a secret recipe? Is there an ingredient in there that, does he have powdered
good.
Butter?
They're just, you know, I like, you know, when I take a pancake mix, you have the different ones out there, Bisquick, whatever. And these are much better than them, I thought. But that's just me.
Well, you know, when I was young and single, I used to actually eat pancakes more. You know, I was an Aunt Jemima fan. They were the best. I was into the historic, there's a black woman on the cover, therefore I should think of this as politically correct thing. I never thought about it. It was just good. It was good food. Aunt Jemima, that's cool. You know, it's funny, when we were in Australia, we never thought about stuff like this. Because I had no racial consciousness at all. I never even heard the word race. Obviously there were, as I'm going through school, we had black students, we had white students, we had Asian students, we had Indian students, Indian. And everybody was a different skin color. I mean, everybody was a different skin color, you know. And so I was like one of the whitest folks, being Canadian. And one of the blackest people I've ever seen in my life was from Indonesia. And this, we're talking serious black. I mean, it's a contrast as you could get. I never even knew it was black until I got to the United States. That's how little we thought about skin color in Australia. It literally did not register with us, other than the fact that, you notice a difference. But it meant nothing. It was such a nice thing to be at. You know, and I didn't even know how good I had it mentally, you know, being in a private school where we all wore the same uniform. And nobody cared, you know, what you looked like. It just cared who you were, what you did. You know, were you good on the sports team? You know, did you know stuff? It was a very different environment. Okay, I had I posted a couple of things on Facebook yesterday regarding airliners and masks. So apparently, two of the CEOs have come out and said, you know what, this is really. And so I want to go over that a little bit, and then we'll get into our economic chat. So I don't think economic chats are some of our most popular shows, but I think they're necessary. But I like to sort of, bring some other stuff in here. So this is in the Blaze. This is Blaze Media. This is Sarah Taylor, December 16th. So would that be yesterday? What's today? Yeah, yesterday. So it looks like, she says that CEOs of two major airlines spoke out and questioned the necessity of masks on flights. And this is actually CNN reported this. American Airlines CEO Doug Parker and Southwest CEO Gary Kelly both made related remarks during a Wednesday Senate hearing on the financial support of the airline industry has received amid the ongoing pandemic. Oh, got some extra.
Oh, that's just me. Sorry, I got you on phone and on radio.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if you hit a button there. That sounded kind
of
cool.
No, that was my fault, and I couldn't get my phone turned off fast enough because sometimes you have to listen both ways to get be able to hear it because technology. Sorry.
Well, it's so funny because sometimes I think I hear an echo and sometimes I don't. So this is why I ask if I'm still on the air because sometimes the sound just changes. This is completely arbitrary. But if it ever doesn't sound good, just tell me. Tell me right away. Don't wait because I need to know I can make an adjustment of different things here. Anyway, so back to our airline industry people. So I guess they're in a Senate hearing yesterday. I can probably get a recording of that. And it says masks are required on all American airliners per order of the federal government. Now, that couldn't be the CDC. They wouldn't have done that. That had to have come from the FAA. So just if your computer's up and working, if you have a chance, I'm going to sort of vamp on this for a little bit. But if you can look up where that order came from, masks are required on airliners because of whom? I guess just the FAA. I don't think because, like I said, CDC can't order stuff like that. Anyway, something to finish the article, and Gene, if you have a chance to check that, I'd be very curious. Thank you. It says, what are the details? In the article, both Parker and Kelly said that they don't believe masks make much difference when it comes to tamping down the transmission of COVID-19 and that advanced air filtration systems on airliners make them one of the safest places to be with regard to coronavirus. In fact, I agree. I mean, airliners, you know, have amazing air, you know, but the thing is a lot of people don't use it, the air. They don't turn the vents on. First thing you do when you get an airline is turn your vent on. You know, it's not just for blowing, you know, air in your face so you feel all refreshed. It's to keep oxygen circulating through the cabin. So I don't even know why they those things are allowed to close. Those vents should be on all the time. It should be able to reduce them, but you shouldn't be able to turn them off. That's just nuts. Anyway, back to the article. The remarks were spurred by a question posed by Senator Roger Wicker, a Republican in Mississippi, during the hearing. Wicker, ranking Republican on the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, asked whether the company CEOs believe that masks ought to be mandated on airliners. Kelly answered, I think the case is very strong that masks don't add much, if anything, in the air cabin environment. It is very safe and very high quality compared to any other indoor setting. Yeah, that's for sure. Parker added, I concur. An aircraft is the safest place you can be. It's true of all our aircraft. They all have the same HEPA, H-E-P-A, HEPA, I'll just call them H-E-P-A filters and airflow. And we got Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, begged to differ and insisted that not all planes are equipped with the same air filtration systems. Ooh, maybe the cockpit air is better than the cabin air. Wouldn't that be interesting? So it's important to recognize that the safe, controlled environment on planes includes the HEPA filters that are not on all aircraft. Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, so it goes on, but it just cracks me up that everybody on airlines has to wear masks. You know, you're right next to each other. You know, if you're that close, I mean, the masks don't do anything anyway. So if you're going to get sick, it was funny too, because we had the, you know, that airborne, that whatever that over the counter thing you can take that boosts your immune system. Cause everybody used to get colds on airliners. I did. I did a couple of, worked on cruise ships a couple of times, and both times I flew out, I got a massive cold from flying. Now, granted, it was from San Francisco to Fort Lauderdale, big change in climate. And just, you know, and then went right to work. So that probably contributed. But anyway, whether it's the airline or not, I'm not really sure. But point being that, you know, I think the air is really good, but I still think you can get a cold from other factors, weather, you know, changes in the environment, changes in the air itself. So it's very interesting stuff. Anyway, the report concludes. A continuous analysis from the report shows that ventilation of air on aircraft reduces the possibility of exposure to COVID-19 lower than other common settings, such as a grocery store or indoor restaurant. Well, that's interesting. This effectively counters the proximity travelers are subject to during flights. Because of the frequent exchange of air and the HEPA filters on planes, over 99% of the particles containing the virus are removed from cabin air. That sounds pretty good. Yeah, so I'm just curious about it. Gene, did you get a chance to, if you could, find possibly where some of these things were, or where the regulation is? Is that easy
what,
to find?
Mask wearing on planes.
Well, I'm just curious if it's an FAA regulation as to why they.
Oh,
have
it's
that.
A Fauci regulation, and then people bought into what the airlines did, no doubt.
So it's not an actual regulation.
I will try to find it. I'm not sure if I'll be able to. My computer is going
Don't give it too long. Yeah. Don't,
but,
oh yeah. Exactly. Well, let me try. Let's do a little joint effort here.
I'm gonna put who regulated mask wearing on airlines.
So all right. Let's play something really obnoxious from my collection of of Biden things. Let's see if I can find where I put my Joe Biden dark winter. We're a little disorganized this morning, as you can tell.
I think you need to play something more upbeat.
Joe Biden's dark winter. Okay, next time. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. Okay, it's the TSA required them in airports, which is interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so... Okay, so this is going to get more confusing here. But it looks like the CDC, hang on, let me see if I can find this. It says...
Welcome to Love Talk Radio. Please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Oh, are you calling in again, Gene? I just heard you. Gene, you're broadcasting on the radio again. Gene?
Yeah,
oh,
sorry,
Gene.
I had to leave. I had to leave the room.
Oh, hold on. Let me put your phone on hold.
You froze up on my computer.
We're all having computer problems this morning here. Welcome to Action Radio. None of us, neither Gene nor I, are computer technicians, as you can tell. It's one of those days. All right. So, okay, so I've got you on computer. Your phone is muted. If, do you want me to, should I unmute your phone, or what would you like me to do? Oh, you can unmute your phone. Well, there we go. Gene's back to computer. It's, you know, and I'll do it too. You hear me when my computer, when something happens to my microphone, I'll just call into my own show. It's kind of weird, but that's how it works. All right. So this requirement, this is from the CDC. Oh, they think they do it. Requirement for face masks on public transportation conveyances and at transportation hubs. CDC is announcing that it will be amending its face masks order to not require people to wear a mask on outdoor areas or conveyances. CDC can't order that. They can't order this. On January 29th, 2021, CDC issued an order that required face masks to be worn by all people on public transportation. They can't do that. I thought this was like an emergency declaration of, Brandon. Huh. So they don't have to do this. And so are the airlines ordering it based on a suggestion from the CDC? That's weird. Oh, now we have to look into this. Where did this order come from? Is voluntary compliance? Okay, I'm not going to spend much more time on it. Well, let's see what we got going here. Let's see what we can do about Gene's line.
I was saying, didn't the airlines get money from COVID relief or whatever?
That I don't know. You know what? We should say this. I'm going to make a little note to myself. We're going to say this for another show because I don't want to. I don't like to do too much research during the show because people are like, Greg, what are you doing? You got a show to do. So let me get my. Whoop, wrong notebook. Wrong notebook. God, I should have stayed in bed this morning. We're not doing. It's funny how one little thing. Can, well, it's funny how one little thing can rattle your whole life. I mean, it's hysterical. Yeah. So one thing, it's like a snowball effect. Where,
and how you start the day. You know what I mean? With the computer issues, it seems like if one thing happens, uh-huh. It's kind of like a snowball effect. Interesting.
It sure
it's
is
like,
this morning.
Stop.
All right. Let me see if my other browser is working. Oh, there we go. That's interesting. I click one thing and another website pops up. So like I say, all my sites are out of order this morning. So we are completely disorganized. Then I still had tea that I spilled on my keyboard. I think I told you that story, right? A couple of my keys aren't working. One of them is brightness. So I can't regulate the brightness unless I go into the preferences. We're not doing well today. All right. But the reason I brought this
enjoy the ride, yeah.
Exactly.
This is like,
we'll do what we do best. So.
People can relate. And I just want to thank people for the prayers. My cousin did die last night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So Fauci did kill another one. I have not talked to the family, But the thing is, what I was getting online with the posts and stuff, and just what, because other family members were contacting other family members, and, you know, I didn't want to overwhelm them. And so anyway, his kidneys shut down a few days ago, and I don't want to get into the whole story, but it sounded exactly like, unfortunately, the typical hospitalization route: remdesivir, vent, dialysis.
Yeah.
And how sad is that? And I'm just wondering if these families can sue for the treatment was given, that they did a treatment that was known that doesn't work. And also I wonder if they could sue if the hospital is making $100,000 or more off each COVID person extra, and that's not even counting what they already get paid for the vents and all the other stuff. It's like, I wonder if the families can sue to get some of that money.
That's a really good question. Maybe
you know,
it sounds like a next weekend to look
to
into.
That, yeah, I mean, how awful, awful. And I know he wasn't vaccinated because he truly believed in not. I mean, he truly believed in his choice, and he didn't want the government telling him what to do.
It's kind of irrelevant in a way because the vaccine doesn't stop COVID. It doesn't stop you getting it. It doesn't stop you spreading it. It allegedly reduces the symptoms, but it causes more dangerous symptoms. You're actually better off. You know, I think you're better off without it, even if you're in, quote, a high-risk group, because I can't see anything good coming out of this. The best thing you do is either boost your immune system or get early treatment. Those are things that apparently work. And go ahead. Yeah,
and unfortunately, in his case, the way it sounds, he may have had it before he realized he had it. And so what I mean by that is by the time he did figure, you know, by the time he figured out he had COVID, it may have been farther along, put it that way, meaning that, you know, obviously he was having a harder time breathing. Otherwise, he wouldn't have went into the hospital. But I don't know. I don't think we can. We just need to keep spreading the word. Please, people, get the ivermectin, get what you can to if you do get COVID, like I got it and I was fine without any of that stuff, but you know, not everybody is, and who knows if it works or not. But the bottom line is, I mean, this research, I mean, depending on who you talk to, but the real research out there does show that it works. But regardless if it does or does not, it's one thing to try, because if you end up in the hospital anyway, at least we know, you know, you tried all your options versus you go into the hospital and you're given the remdesivir and then you're put on the vent.
Yeah, that's the death sentence. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's, you know, if we could save some lives, you know, and these are needless lives that are lost. I think, you know, everybody understands at a certain point, you know, your life is over and you live as much as you can, you do as much as you can, but, you know, it's kind of out of our hands, you know, it's in God's hands. But the thing is, we don't want to lose life prematurely. We don't want to lose life needlessly. We don't want to lose life for stupid or frivolous or capricious reasons. You know, you should, you know,
for
you're entitled to the
control.
Exactly. You're entitled to the life that God gave you. And so, but you're entitled to all of that life. This is why suicide is so wasteful, besides all the other problems. So, you know, the fact that it's a tragedy, but just think of the life that you didn't lead. You know, I've said this, you know, remember back during my really depressed days, you know, and I talked to myself. I had no intention of ending my life. I was just miserable for a couple of years. But I thought to myself, I said, you know, here's like, you know, me talking to me. I don't get to write the ending. I just get to write the chapters. And so I have a lot more chapters to write. And this is before Action Radio. I mean, it was an idea. It wasn't even a thing yet. You don't get to... you know, you want to be able to write the chapters, and you don't get to decide which one's the last one. So keep writing your chapters. The endings are, you know, God will write the ending, but the chapters you got to keep those chapters coming, keep those different phases coming. And so don't think that. And there's gonna be good and bad ones, you know. And I've seen good, I've seen bad, I've seen amazing, and I've seen horrible. But that's all part of life. So you don't want to miss anything. You don't want to the horrible things, you don't want to, unfortunately, it's kind of weird to say, but you don't want to miss the horrible things because they make the good things look so much better. It gives you perspective. And so, but to the needless deaths, these are the ones that bother me, the needless deaths, the preventable ones. This is the ones that drive me crazy.
Right. And how they died, you know, it wasn't a peaceful death. I mean,
nope.
Struggling, you know, basically it, and Fauci's name is on it. That's all I got to say. Cause of death should be Fauci.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be an interesting movement to try and bring that about and start putting that into. You want to talk about a language change? That'd be a perfect language change. You know, death by Fauci. You know, is really what it is. And if we start talking about death by Fauci, people start hearing that and internalizing that message. That's very powerful. And so I think, you know, as the show grows, and hopefully, you know, more and more people will be sharing it. They are, but they're not, you know, not as fast. Of course, they'll never be as fast as I want. But that's the kind of message we could get out there, death by Fauci. And if he wants to challenge it, then let him challenge it. And we'll slap him down with the facts. You know, that he put remdesivir in the hospitals. He banned hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. He banned early treatments. He and big tech and big pharma, you know, conspired to make amazingly profitable vaccines that aren't vaccines, and they certainly aren't cures, and force them on the American public and, you know, block every other avenue. And there's so many other things to do. You know, in fact, I'll challenge people to do the same thing I did a couple of years ago. Just look up what kills viruses. And this whole world will open up to you that you've never seen before of things that kill viruses. I mean, that's what it's all about. Anyway.
Well, Greg,
yeah,
you know, this pandemic has made more millionaires or billionaires, I don't know which one it is, regardless,
mm-hmm.
more
yeah.
because of Pfizer and those type of place or companies
mm-hmm.
that no wonder. No wonder they want to sell more drugs, because there's more of the people that have stock or that are involved are making more money. So it's
mm-hmm.
like, so my cousin who died, his wife is not able to work, and, you know, his kids are growing, but yet she has no money coming in now. And
mm-hmm.
what are they? I hope they love their millions using it when they know it's blood money because other people died from it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very similar to the tobacco companies. You know, tobacco companies is a product that will kill you when used as intended. That was always the line that came up with. It's like, yeah, I mean, a product should not be a product if it's the proper use, it still kills you. You know, it should be the misuse. I mean, you can misuse anything from choking toys to, you know, to firearms to vehicles to alcohol to chainsaws to anything. I mean, you can get hurt or killed with all kinds of things, but it's the misuse. Whereas with cigarettes, it's
right.
the use, the you know,
right.
as intended. In other words, the smoking of the cigarette is what kills you.
Right. I remember a couple of years ago when
uh-huh.
people got in such an uproar about the Pellatron commercial around Christmas time, and you know, this guy got supposedly husband, whatever, got his wife a Pellatron bike. People got hurt, killed with that, like kids. I don't know what really happened. I don't remember anymore. But
was it a treadmill thing or what?
It's like, pardon me?
Was it a treadmill device or what kind of thing was it?
It was a bicycle. That was a bicycle, but they have other things as well. But people got hurt off with it. And so right away, everybody shunned it. Well, look how many people got hurt, or not got hurt, got killed off of what the Fauci and the hospitals are pushing because of greed and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know,
and
Fauci's
is
never going to change his tune. Why?
No.
Because that would make him look bad. He already looks bad.
Well, he has to protect his lies with other lies. You know, we've talked about this several times on the show, that lies beget lies beget lies. You know, today's lies are here to cover yesterday's lies. Tomorrow's lies are going to cover today's lies. You know, the old, what a tangled web we weave when we practice to deceive. He's got 40 years of lies that he has to keep making up new lies for. You know, so this guy's got a tremendous burden of lying, and he has to have a really good memory to make sure that, you know, he covers his lies properly. And of course, no one has that good a memory. And that's why he keeps getting caught up, you know, and people proving his lies because he's not an expert. You know, he's good, but he's not an expert liar. You know, unlike Hillary, who's made it a science, you know, but Fauci, he's not that good a liar. And that's why he gets caught all the time. He's just evil. There's a big difference. But this idea that, you know, that hospitals are, you know, make more money off your death than your life, that has to change. Because people, you know, as virtuous as we think people are, there's always a certain percentage that will happily kill you for money. And that seems to be what's going on now. Or they'll look the other way, or they'll think they're just going to go along. It's like whistleblowers are few and far between. And I don't know where the whistleblower is in the medical field right now. They get fired, you know, and there should be some kind of whistleblower protection. Where's malpractice? You know, where's the malpractice gone? You know, if someone gets put on remdesivir, they had, I think 53% of the people in the trial died in the drug trial, and yet they're on anyway under an emergency use authorization. And then Trump was duped into making all those ventilators, you know, to try and blow out the fluid that's created by the remdesivir. You know, and here's the thing that's so tragic about this is that, you know, people, your body would fight this all the way. They would fight the remdesivir. They would fight the fluid. But your body can only do so much. And that's why poisons kill you. That's why infections can kill you. Staph infections can overwhelm your body. You know, and this kind of stuff, it's so totally needless. Now, I don't know what the treatment is. Gene, do you know if your lungs fill with fluid? I mean, when my chest filled with fluid, I mean, my lungs didn't fill, my chest filled with fluid. And I was suffocating, literally suffocating. They drained the fluid.
Right.
Why aren't they draining the fluid of these people that are being remdesivir killed? Why aren't they just taking the fluid out there?
I don't know. That would be an interesting question to ask, you know, more medically based person like a doctor or nurse. But I wonder though too if at that point the I don't want to say drastic, but the change in fluid when they're already, because usually the heart and everything is still compromised by that point as well. They maybe, I don't know, they maybe don't think.
Well, mine wasn't.
Be good. Yeah, but yours is a different situation. You had your kidneys, yes. These people, you know, on remdesivir, that causes kidneys to shut down. And so it's a snowball effect. It's your organ, what I know, I mean, my little pea brain information of what I know of COVID, I think what happens is your organs just shut down, and then you get the fluid around the lung. But even him, he went into congestive heart failure, and they got that more stabilized so he could do one day of that or try a dialysis again. But then he went back down, and it's like the sad thing is he's not an isolated case.
No,
and that's
no,
what's so frustrating, because case after case, person after person that goes in the hospital gets remdesivir, gets put on the vent. Not too many of them ever get off the vent.
Yeah.
So why are they keeping touting something that doesn't work? I don't understand. And they're allowed to do it and get big bucks from it.
Well, and that's the question too. I mean, Dr. Peter McCullough has the same question. Dr. Zelenko has the same question. Dr. Mikovits has the same question. I mean, there are doctors all over this country with that same question. Why are you continuing to put remdesivir into people, causing kidney failure, causing pulmonary edema, I guess it's called, causing lungs to fill with fluid, and instead of draining the fluid and curing the problem, you're trying to pump it out, you're trying to blast it out with a ventilator. You know, and this is what I'm saying. Why did, you know, with me, they took out over 4 liters of 4.5 liters of fluid. What's that? 2 gallons? That's a lot of fluid.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah.
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 You
I,
know, but,
I just know that, you know, when other family members went into the hospital and they had fluid around the heart, fluid around the lungs. Yeah. They were able to take it out, but I'm not sure in the COVID case. Yeah. And maybe if they take it out, it would just keep coming back because the kidneys and everything are shutting down.
Yeah, but at least you could be alive, and you know, even if they took the fluid out and then it started coming back in, they would know there was a source of it, and maybe they could trace the source and shut that up. Of course, the source is remdesivir. You know, that's what's that,
yeah.
But I don't know,
yeah.
But you know, and people, you have to be your own doctor. See, I want to spend a couple more minutes on this. I want to talk a little bit of economics.
But the thing is, Greg, you can be your own doctor, but look how many people now that are fighting in the hospital get their loved ones the ivermectin and stuff, and they have to take the hospital to court. Does that make sense? And you talked about the case in, what was it, Virginia, where the person worked at the hospital and it was his mother. The hospital wanted to take away his license. I think he was, I don't know if he was respiratory, what he was, I don't know what he did. But they wanted to take
X-ray
that away.
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding me?
Well, they have to reinforce the lies. See, if they admit remdesivir is bad now, almost 2 years into this, then that makes them liable. So the lies have to defend the lies. So they have to keep lying. They have to keep doing this to prove that they thought it was right all along. Because if they suddenly reverse on this policy, but the thing is people are dying because of it. Yeah.
You would think there would be a couple righteous people in charge of hospitals. They don't have to go with right or wrong. They could just say, this was the information we were given. It was false.
Right.
Or this is the information we were given, and we believe that based on where it came from, and it happens to be false.
Yeah.
And we're changing our course. That's all they have to say. Or they don't even have to say that. They just say, hey, you know what? We've done more research, and we want to try this as well.
Mm-hmm. Or this is a better treatment. We've, you know, I think try is kind of a word you don't want to use too much in medicine. I mean, unless, you know, right to try as opposed to people who with a terminal condition, they're going to die anyway. You know, at that point, you have nothing to lose because you're already terminal. But I think the idea of trying, and this is, I think it's more solid than that. I think there are much better things that work. And here's what I would recommend for everybody. And I'm not a doctor, you know, I don't play one on the radio, but I do, I can research, and all of you can research too. So you don't have to, this is what gets into the whole idea of experts again. You don't have to be an expert. You can read the same studies that the doctors read. You know, you don't have to know all the numbers and all the chemical formulas, all the technical stuff. You can read the summaries. You can see what works, what doesn't, what's good, what's bad. You know, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to do that. And so you can read these same studies. That's how I read the study on chloroquine, you know, from Dr. Raoult in Marseille, France. Do I know I can't tell you the chemical formula of chloroquine. I know hydroxychloroquine has hydrogen and oxygen added onto it because I know basic chemistry, you know, but that's not genius level either. So I think people get intimidated sometimes for looking this up. Well, I can't read a doctor's study. I'm not a doctor. Well, it's nonsense. You can read the summary. That's what I do, you know, and get the information. But what I know is that you can boost your immune system with vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, and hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, or quercetin. Now, quercetin, this is something that Dr. Zelenko discovered. It's like the natural, it's like the root substance that they make hydroxychloroquine from. So quercetin is this naturally occurring stuff, and it's non-prescription. So you take more of it than you would take hydroxychloroquine because hydroxychloroquine is good stuff. It's powerful, so you don't need as much of it. Still get the immune effects. But if you can take quercetin, you just buy it over the counter. That's what I do. Buy quercetin, buy vitamin D3, buy vitamin C, and buy zinc. You know, and you can look at VladimirZelenkoMD.com, and you can get the proportions for prevention or cure. They're right there. So if you can do that, you know, and don't get sick in the first place, you're light years ahead of anybody else. If you do get sick, you know, then you go to the doses that are going to, you know, the early treatments. And then if you still need to go to the hospital, hopefully you'll never get to the hospital, but at least you find a place, you know, or find a doctor that can treat you outside the hospital. So you never want to let it get that far. So there's a time limit. There's a certain responsibility of people that as soon as you feel, you know, sick, if you think you have a respiratory or a lung problem, immediately, you know, start taking these things and boost your immune system and see if you can knock it out of your system. In the same way that we take vitamin C for colds. I don't see a doctor to increase the amount of vitamin C I take in the wintertime if I feel like I have a cold coming on. I just take more vitamin C because you can't overdose on it.
Right.
Your body will say, we'll give you some signs that, yep, you've had enough vitamin C. You know, but I think Linus Pauling was taking 10,000 units a day. I don't recommend that. You know, but 1,000, maybe even 2,000. I think I've heard doctors say up to 5,000 if you're sick. You can take a lot of vitamin C, but if it starts affecting
right.
your digestion and other things, then that's too much. But your body will dump excess vitamin C. You know, so you can figure it out. For me, 2,000. If I'm normal is 1,000 a day. If I'm sick, 2,000 works really well. You know, that's just stuff I discovered about me. Anyway, the one thing I wanted to make with the reason I started this conversation, you know, 45 minutes ago with the airlines, is that there are devices, kind of like a smoke room detects a fire. There are devices now that detect COVID in the air. So there's no reason to wear masks on an airplane if there's no COVID on the airplane. You know, if it's not in measurable quantities, you know, and these airliners, they could, I'll pull up the company right here. I might get this article out here. Here we go. Let me pop this article right up right now. But there are COVID detectors. So airlines could have, say, three of them, you know, one in the front, one in the back, one in the middle. You know, it's got a plug-in detector.
That's pretty scary, though.
Why?
What I'm saying by that is because, okay, then are the COVID police going to come around to find out who has COVID? That's the only reason.
Well, it detects it in the air. It doesn't detect it on the person. So you don't know who has COVID.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So then it's like, are they going to assume someone in the vicinity has COVID and then they're going to make everybody test?
That's a good question. I don't know. If you're coughing and wheezing and sneezing, you know, can an airplane refuse you your flight because you might have COVID?
That's me on any given day.
Exactly. I mean, how many people cough and sneeze in the winter? I don't know, what, most people? Most people above, you know, midway in the country? You know, the northern half? Because it's cold? Anyway, so we got to, let me see what this company is called. CTO. Oh, no, so he's the CTO. I guess that's chief technical officer at Optive. So this is a company that's called Optive, O-P-T-E-E-V, and then their product is called VIRAWARN, V-I-R-A, I guess it's for virus, and WARN, W-A-R-N, VIRAWARN by Optive. And it's this device, like I say, and it detects, this is like a smoke detector monitoring. This is a commercial. This is not an article. So just let everybody know what I'm reading from. This is like a smoke detector monitoring the air and alerting when smoke is detected. VIRAWARN monitors the air and immediately alerts when coronavirus particles are detected. The patented sensor technology focuses on the unique electrochemistry of spiked protein viruses. This may detect people who are vaccinated. Because vaccinated people shed spike proteins. Isn't that interesting? Anyways, this includes COVID-19 and influenza to trigger an alert. VIRAWARN modules are plugged into electrical sockets located around the periphery of a room to provide blanket screening protection across the entire space. We could easily put this on an airliner. They have power. They have generators on board. That's what the jet engines are for, besides powering the airplane. VIRAWARN quickly detects airborne coronavirus within minutes of them being introduced by infected individuals. I don't know. I think it would be interesting, rather than having everybody wear masks, you know, and then if coronavirus particles are detected in the air, which they probably will be, I'm sure they're all over the country, then you can decide, you should be able to decide for yourself if you want to wear a mask or not. I would not. I've got an immune system. But I just find that interesting. Huh. Okay.
Right.
That was fun.
No, very interesting.
Yeah. So in other words, what it comes down to is that masks are a control device, whereas a virus detector is a warning device. All right. So in terms of if you have a smoke alarm, that's a warning device. A control device would be taking all the matches and cigarette lighters and gas stoves and anything with a flame out of your, and pilot lights and anything with a flame out of your house. That'd be the equivalent of COVID. They would ban anything with a flame in your house because, well, it might catch fire, right? Same thing, you know, it's like we're going to vaccinate your house from flames. That would be the equivalent. Instead, we have smoke detectors. So you're still free to have gas stoves and candles and, you know, all kinds of other open flames and cigarette lighters and things like that and barbecues, you know, with lighter fluid. And that's okay. But you have a smoke detector to detect if there's a fire. If there's a fire, you put it out. Whereas, you know, COVID, if COVID were treated – you know, like we treat fires, yeah, they would take out. Yeah, your house would have probably a sprinkler system that would be on, you know, a couple times a day just to make sure. You know, I mean, you can carry this to the extreme, but that's what we're talking about.
Right.
Anyway, let me play something. If you have any more comments on that, I want to make sure. Then I want to try to play something here just for fun, our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. And then I want to get into a little bit of economics, and hopefully I'll make it interesting. You, tell me if it's, you know, if this holds your interest, because I can be real nerdy at times and get into things that I don't know, you know exactly what it is. Let me give you Anti-Federalist number 6. Go ahead, Jean.
I'd like to talk about the TikTok thing that's going around too, because used to have TikTok for a few months and then I got rid of it. But the little dinky town where I went to school here in Minnesota closed down for today because of a threat or a phone call or something, text or something that was received, and I guess it's this is the day. So it's like, then other people say there's no threat at all. So I don't know.
Well, TikTok comes directly from the Chinese Communist Party. It has artificial intelligence designed to data harvest all your information. China's building the world's largest data bank on everybody. I'm sure they have us. You know, first of all, doing Action Radio. I mean, we're back in China. They blocked us for a while, but apparently we're back now. So I find that rather interesting. But yeah, I would never open TikTok. I would never use TikTok. I don't want anything to do with TikTok. I won't even open a video on Facebook of TikToks. If I find one that I have open, I immediately shut it down. I don't want anything to do with those people. So I would stay away from anything to do with TikTok. And that's from Claire Lopez, you know, who's foreign intelligence, who knows this kind of stuff. Oh, I saw her. She was a reporter on our show for a long time. Amazing information. I saw her on One American News briefly, and I forgot what it was, a report on China. I guess the Biden, not Biden, but the Putin-Xi conversation. So China's talking to Russia, and Claire had lots to say on that, so I'll have to maybe I'll just see if I can find a video and see what's going on with that. All right, so we've done Anti-Federalist number 7. I'm going to play Anti-Federalist number 6 because I really like the Anti-Federalist papers. And then I come back and try not to bore you with economics, but I think it's necessary to understand what's going on. And so listen to this, and we'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist number 6 was written officially under the name Sentinel, which is a collaboration of writers. This one is pure genius, so much so that I hardly need to comment except to present the most brilliant passages. I encourage you to read the whole of Anti-Federalist number 6, as it is quite short, and in that brevity lies its power. It was published January 16, 1788. It begins, "The evils of anarchy have been portrayed with all the imagery of language in the growing colors of eloquence. The affrighted mind is thence led to clasp the new Constitution as the instrument of deliverance, as the only avenue to safety and happiness. To avoid the possible and transitory evils of one extreme, it is seduced into the certain and permanent misery necessarily attendant on the other." This is a great summation of what the much longer-winded Alexander Hamilton and John Jay were trying to hide in obfuscating yet colorful language. But essentially, that's it. Adopt the Constitution as is, or it's all over. America will cease to exist as we know it. The author then posits, if it's all over, if we don't immediately embrace the Constitution, and we descend into decadence and anarchy, is that really the worst possible outcome? Continuing on, Sentinel says this, "If anarchy, therefore, were the inevitable consequence of rejecting the new Constitution, it would be infinitely better to incur it, for even then there would be at least the chance of good government rising out of the licentiousness. But to rush at once into despotism because there is a bare possibility of anarchy ensuing from the rejection, or from what is yet more visionary, the small delay that would be occasioned by a revision and correction of the proposed system of government, is so superlatively weak, so fatally blind, that it is astonishing any person of common understanding should suffer such an imposition to have the least influence on his judgment." In more modern language, stop filling the people with BS propaganda and tell the truth, because your lies aren't working. Then Sentinel presents the most brilliant observation into the fawning over and acceptance of the opinions of so-called, quote, experts, simply because they have risen to preeminent status. And that status alone is all that is needed to justify their aims, goals, and opinions. This mistake is the basis for the entire acceptance of government response to COVID, where clearly the experts are doing everything wrong, but want you to believe it's right, even after hundreds of thousands of people have died needlessly. But it's okay because they are experts and they know best. Sentinel continues, "But when I view among such converts men otherwise preeminent, it raises a blush for the weakness of humanity that these, her brightest ornaments, should be so dim-sighted to what is self-evident to most men, that such imbecility of judgment should appear where so much perfection was looked for. This ought to teach us to depend more on our own judgment and the nature of the case than upon the opinions of the greatest and best of men who, from constitutional infirmities or particular situations, may sometimes view an object through a delusive medium. But the opinions of great men are more frequently the dictates of ambition or private interest." Could anything more true be said today? This paper is so good, so full of richness, so prophetic as to what is happening today, that I'm going to hold at this, the first paragraph, and pick it up again next week with more of this amazing analysis, not only of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution, but what actually did. The anti-federalists, it appears, were right. So now, what should we do? The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio. Dangerously cool. Okay, we're back, and we have Gene, and if anybody wants to join us, 215-383-3832. Let me check live chat. I haven't checked that for a while. If you want to join us at live chat, if you want to type in a message, feel free. Just go to the live chat portion of our broadcast page, get yourself a free account, and you can type in anything you want. And if it's a decent comment, we'll respond to it, even if you feel free to disagree completely. That works too. Also, we have a Skype line if anybody wants to check in with us from around the world. I should probably activate that. Now that my computer's working, let me bring the Skype line online, and just in case someone's checking in from who knows where. Alan Dawson, we're going to get him probably more next year, I think, because he's really busy right now. I guess he's gearing up for the tourist season. So I'm going to open up the Skype account, and that's for new folks that are calling in. Once you've called in, you're going to be on the list, and let me move a couple things here, and that's how that works. Okay, so let me try and see if I can make sense of what's going on. I think one of the one thing that that the journalists of this country fail miserably at is explaining economic issues, and they're letting the government lie horribly about what's going on. So I'm going to see if I can, all right, Skype line's up and working. I'm going to see if I can explain what it is that's going on as I see it, and if this makes sense to you. And of course, Gene's kind of like my gauge here, that hopefully I can make this interesting enough to hold your attention as you go through this, because economic stuff gets pretty dry and boring. You go to most economic classes in college, they're boring. I wish I could tell you a story, good, but it involves a profanity. You know, when I was in an economics class, so I'm going to have to save that one for another day. I'm not sure quite how I'm going to tell it. Anyway. But the point is that most of the economic stuff is really dull and boring, but it doesn't have to be, because when you take into account culture and history and you know, people's beliefs and expectations and how they use money and spend money and who spends money and who doesn't, it's really quite fascinating. But you got to bring in those other aspects. If you just do supply and demand and do supply curves and demand curves, you're going to get bored out of your skull. I was. So let's see if we can make it interesting. All right. So we've got a government that is obsessed with spending money and borrowing money. They have no control. They have no limits. They don't even see limits. They don't. They're addicted. They're like the worst shopaholic with the national credit card, and they see no problem in spending trillions upon trillions of dollars. I mean, it used to be a horrible thing to raise the debt, you know, $1 billion, and now a trillion is 1,000 billions. You know, so if you've got a Build Back Better bill that's $5 trillion, that's $5,000 billions. That's what, 500,000 millions? You know, that's a lot of money. I mean, a trillion is a staggering amount of money, and to have $5 trillion, as the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, you know, forecast this Build Back Better nonsense to be, it's not going to build anything. It'll take us back to the worst economic times in history, and it certainly isn't better. And I'll probably get a list of what's in it. Probably there's like 150 new programs. Just what we need right now is 150 new programs in government. So the purpose for the Democrats, for the Marxists, it seems like their purpose is to spend money, and the purpose of the gelding Republicans is to let them. This seems how Washington is working right now. So there's a lie. I've explained it before. I want to try and explain it again. Janet Yellen is one of the worst perpetrators of this lie. We have to raise the debt ceiling to meet our obligations, or we will default. You've heard it over and over and over again. It is a blatant lie. It's a bald-faced lie. I believe that's spelled B-A-L-D. Not bold-faced lie, bald-faced lie. It's an absolute lie. There is no reason to raise the debt ceiling ever. In fact, the whole reason we have a debt ceiling is to limit the borrowing. If you can raise the debt ceiling, you don't have a limit to borrowing. It's a floor. It's like, it's a jumping off point for the next time. You know, I got a great article from the New York Post I'll get into in just a little bit. So, and you know this in your own budget, your own wallet, in your own financial affairs. If you are approaching the limit of your credit card, what can you do? I don't know. Stop spending, pay it down, you know, so you have credit when you need it. That to me is the logical solution. Well, the federal government works exactly the same way. There is absolutely no reason except for their willpower. But there's no physical reason. There's no rule. There's no law. There's no regulation. There's no prevention. There's nothing that prevents the government from cutting their spending. Nothing. Except they don't want to. All right? So if you look at the national debt in terms of a credit card, and it would be as if you could say to your credit card company, you know, I've just bought a boat. So you have to raise my credit limit, you know, $50,000 to cover my boat. That's a pretty cheap boat. Okay. Well, let's just say you bought yourself a 50,000 foot, you know, sailboat. All right. And so you bought it, you know, you signed the papers, you've got it, you know, and it's yours. And then you say to your credit card company, you know, to meet my obligations, you have to raise my credit limit to $50,000 so I can pay for this boat. All right. That's what Congress is doing. They want to spend $5 trillion on this Marxist Build Back Better program. And the only way they can do it, because they don't have the money in Congress to borrow right now. The debt limit, you know, that has been raised like 98 times since they first had one. It's been raised, I'll get the New York Post article in a second. But the national debt's been raised 98 times since World War II. Well, that to me is not a debt limit. That's a debt ladder. It's a stepping stone. If Congress wants their boat, you know, they've already bought the boat, you know, and they said, well, now you have to raise the credit limit so to meet my obligations because I bought a boat. Well, that's backwards. You don't buy the boat unless you have the credit to buy in the first place. And if Congress actually operated with the debt limit, that's what they'd do. They'd say, well, we can't afford $5 trillion for a Build Back Better program unless you want to cut something else $5 trillion. Well, that's a lot of money. What are you going to cut? You know, and so this is where it comes from. The whole purpose of a debt ceiling is to stop the borrowing beyond a certain limit so Congress does make spending cuts. If they want Build Back Better, they got to take $5 trillion from somewhere else. That's what they used to say when they said, well, how are you going to pay for it? In other words, what programs are you going to get rid of in order to give yourself $5 trillion? Well, considering this is the largest bill in American history, we've never had a bill this big, you're going to cut a whole lot of stuff. Just to give you an example, the defense budget, the entire defense of the United States is under $1 trillion. All right? We're spending $5 trillion on socialist Marxism, and our own defense is one-fifth. It's less than one-fifth of that. Gene, making sense so far? How am I doing?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. So my goal, my campaign, my press release, that if I have – I'm going to check and see if I said this. Sometimes I think about it that I've done something. I haven't actually done it yet, but in my mind it's already done because I've thought of it. It's kind of a weird thing. But defund Brandon. I know I've written CPAC about this. I'm hoping they will make this their theme because the CPAC, the convention, the Conservative Political Action Conference, is the end of February. Now, the debt ceiling and the budget comes up for a vote the week before that. So my goal is to have them defund Brandon. And I'm hoping that CPAC and all the conservatives, because if conservatives really want to conserve, if they want to conserve the budget, if they want to conserve the debt limit, if they want to actually do what they say they're doing and not be geldings, they will have a defund Brandon campaign. And if you really believe, as I do, that this is a Marxist takeover of our government, that it's illegal, you know, the audits aren't moving fast enough. I mean, they're out there, but they're not moving fast enough. Seven states, as Gene, you know, documented yesterday, gave two slates of electors. They gave Trump electors and they gave Biden electors. Well, who gave the Biden electors?
Yeah, who decides that then? I mean, that's just insane. It should have been, it's like they shouldn't have left that state until it was a clear winner.
Mm-hmm.
A clear, fair winner.
Well, here's what happened. They lied. Acted without authority. They put Biden electors in instead of Trump electors against the Constitution because it's the state legislatures that were advancing the Trump electors. It was the secretaries of state and the governors, the executive, In other words, the government was picking the government.
Right.
You know, as opposed to representatives of the people. Well, yeah, the governor is representative of the people, but it's much more indirect. It's an executive power as opposed to a legislative power. Legislative power is supposed to be more powerful because they actually make the laws. But not in this case. In this case, they violate. Just as the Supreme Court violated their constitution, Article 3, which is their constitutional provision, by not taking the Texas case challenging the other state's electors. Texas was challenging exactly the same thing, saying, wait, you can't advance these Biden electors when we've got challenges to them. This is an ongoing investigation. Remember when that used to mean
right.
something? So the audits are an ongoing investigation, okay? So as I understand it, with an ongoing investigation, you cannot act. You don't have the authority. You're not there. So considering that the Brandon insurrection is under an ongoing investigation, they shouldn't be able to do anything. But the Geldings won't say that. I would. In fact, I have. You know, and again, you know, more listeners, more people, more power, more influence, you know, we'll be able to talk about these things and put these things into more people's heads. But this is—they're involved in an ongoing investigation. They should have no policy. They should be able to write no executive orders. They shouldn't be able to do anything unless it's an absolute emergency, and even then, it's still up to the Congress. Should be pretty much in charge until such time as the Brandon insurrection is actually, you know, legally certified that the audits are over. But they're not doing that because they're making this stuff up as they go along. So this is the first time in our history where it's been so blatant that government is acting because they want to, not because it's lawful. Most of what they're doing is illegal. And the budget is a similar kind of thing. We have a debt ceiling. You know, well, they can do this, but it's a lie. So you got the Brandon insurrection wants Build Back Better. The Marxists want Build Back Better. The Geldings just want to be popular. They want to be loved. They want to be liked. They want to be respected. They don't want to fight. You know, we've got a weird situation. There are 48 Democrats in the Senate and 50 Republicans, and yet the Democrats control the Senate. Explain that one to me. You know, you got two independents, all right? Now, they say they caucus with the Democrats. Well, that's nice, but they're still independents. And I know the Senate rules say because they caucus with the Democrats, they're counted as Democrats. But they shouldn't be. What I'm saying is the Republicans, if they weren't Geldings, they would have challenged that long ago, and they would have at least had joint chairs because the vice president is not part of the Senate. The vice president only comes in to break a tie. But during the time
of
the vice president...
Yeah, you know what that is.
Yeah, we know who that is. That's party girl.
No, but right? I said, so, you know why that is, too, that nothing was done about it.
Because they're Geldings.
Yes, they're, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't want all their corruption known either.
Yeah, they could have.
Or they don't want their free rides known. You know, because look how many of these are getting kickbacks from God knows who.
Mm-hmm.
Could even be from Biden himself, since he got a lot of his money illegally through his son and whatnot.
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't know how many Republicans are paid off to not be Republicans, even though they hold the title of Republican. That's an interesting question. I have no idea about the answer to that one. It's worth an investigation. Anyway, so back to the economic part of this. The Defund Brandon campaign would be a way that the Geldings could stop the Brandon insurrection from sending us further to Marxism. All right? So you got to take away their money. You take away their money, you take away their power. If you shut them down, If the Geldings refuse to pass this bill, if they say the filibuster does count, this is not reconciliation, because it's not a reconciliation bill. $5 trillion is not a reconciliation bill because it's not part of the budget. This is an extra budget item. There is no budget right now. You can't have a reconciliation bill unless you have a budget. Now, let me explain how reconciliation works. Reconciliation was a provision brought in I think, 1974, in order to streamline the budgeting process for an addition, subtraction, a tax, modification. In other words, it made the Budget Act work. So if they overlooked something, if they goofed, if something wasn't quite, you know, right, rather than go through the normal process where they have a filibuster where you have to have 60 votes to stop debate. We've explained that before. Gene, if I need to explain that again, let me know. But in the Senate, well, I'll explain it real quickly. In the Senate, it's not the vote on final passage that counts. It's the vote on stopping debate. Because until you stop debate, you can't vote on final passage. And so if a filibuster is in place, then the debate goes on until they stop it. And that's called a cloture vote. It takes 60 votes to stop debate. Once you stop debate, then a simple majority can pass it. So you need 60 votes to stop debate, but 51 votes to pass, or whatever the majority is. If we had three parties, it would be interesting. Anyway, but that's how it works. So it takes a majority of the Senate, so, you know, a majority to pass a bill, but it takes 60 votes, which is almost two-thirds, to stop debate. I think that's a good provision. That's the only way that minority party has any representation at all. And decisions are better when you have more people voting. I'd make all votes 60 in the Senate, quite frankly, and then have the shutoff at 70 for debate. You can get 70% of the senators to agree to something, you probably got a pretty good bill. You know, and you get rid of a lot of bills that that they don't agree to, and that's not a bad thing. All right, so defunding Brandon would enforce the debt ceiling, would actually force a cut in spending. They would take away the stimulus that's already been passed. They would revoke that. They would do everything. They would get rid of Build Back Better. They would take all these bills, all the money that's being paid for people not to work, they would get rid of it. That's what they should do. And people all across the country should demand that. And, you know, the geldings should be forced to do it. And they can. The first thing they can do is change the, you know, if they could, you know, take back the Senate. Now, I know they're going to wait for 2022. But who's to say they're going to win then? And even if they do win, they still might lose. Because they have a majority now. They got 50 senators. The Democrats have 48. They can change the rules anytime they want, but they don't.
Well, the thing is, Greg, since they're not doing anything about voter integrity, next election is not going to be any different than the last one, I really believe.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. And I think we've talked about that, and we need to talk about it a lot more. Because unless the Republicans fix 2020, unless they institute some major vote fraud prevention, which means no mail-in ballots, no absentee ballots, unless, you know, except for the exceptions, and there are exceptions. I would even have the military votes counted on base. You know, don't transmit the results anywhere, because as soon as you transmit stuff over the internet, it can be changed.
So
count the military votes wherever they are. If someone's on a military base, that's considered part of the United States, just like an embassy. All right. So if we have a base in Okinawa, a base in Mannheim, Germany, or near France, wherever the big one is, what's that? Ramstein Air Force Base. As far as I'm concerned, that's U.S. territory. You know, if soldiers are serving on that and it's a U.S. military base, they should be able to vote on it and have the vote counted right there. That's still, you know, that's a sovereign to me as an embassy, because it's the U.S. government, it's the military defending either another country or our country with another country, with the help of them and with their consent. And so that's why we do that. Anyway, so the biggest thing to do is to cut the spending. All right. So just as your credit card, just as your, you know, as you don't buy a $50,000 boat and then call your credit card company and say, you need to raise my credit limit, you know, above $50,000 because I bought this boat. Otherwise I will default on my obligations. You know, credit. What, I mean, what's Gene, you know the answer, right? What's the credit card company going to say to you? Are you nuts?
Yeah.
They're going to say no. Okay. So the American people have to be the credit card company. They have to start saying no. You can't raise the debt ceiling. But in order for that to happen, people have to understand that when Janet Yellen and virtually every media outlet in the country, you know, says that you have to raise the debt ceiling to meet the obligations, you have to know that's a lie. You have to lower the obligations to meet the debt ceiling. Okay? It's just that simple. You lower the obligations to meet the debt ceiling. You don't borrow more money than you have available debt or available credit. You don't do it, just as you do it with your budget and the states do with their budget, by the way. States can't, you know, states have a constitutional limitation. They can, you know, by the states, they can't borrow more money than they have. They have to actually balance their budgets, except California, which lies. But that's a different story. They're Democrats. They figure it's okay. But states balance their budgets every year. Most states do. A lot of states do it, like Florida, without an income tax. How is that possible? Well, because they're not drunk on spending. You know, they're not completely obsessed with spending. So that's the big thing. So, and then what we really need to do is start cutting spending. We need to defund all the Brandon programs. All right, get rid of them. And CPAC should talk about this. And Donald Trump, when he speaks there, should talk about this. And every gelding who doesn't want to be a gelding should talk about this. It's time to lower the debt ceiling. Lower the debt ceiling. Let me try it one more time. Lower the debt ceiling. Lower the obligations, the spending, to meet the lower debt ceiling. And the government will never default. And we can start to pay off our national debt. Just that simple. Gene?
I don't understand what they're. I mean, I don't understand why common sense don't take over. I mean, you have like the AOCs that demand that college should be paid for, or the student debt should be, or people should be dissolved, and all this other stuff. But where does she think this money is coming from to pay all this stuff? You know,
she doesn't care. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but she doesn't care. I mean, it's just that simple. They don't care because they figure the more money they spend, the more votes they're going to get. They see money as votes. It's all about buying votes. And who are they buying votes from? You know, the people that were irresponsible enough not to pay their student loans back. That's whose votes they want. Right? They want people who are dependent on government. Because if government pays their student loans, then those people owe government. The people that were responsible enough to pay off their student loans, they don't care about this program. They've already paid off their student loans. They don't need a free student loan. They're going to be pissed off about this. Because, you know, the people that worked hard to pay off their student loans and some jerk who refuses to pay it off gets to pay it off for free.
Or how about the ones that didn't go to their first choice of schools because it cost too much, but someone else did regardless of how many loans they would have to take out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I didn't go to law school. I didn't do really well on a sample LSAT, but quite frankly, I'd probably be a pretty decent trial lawyer, you know, because I think I can keep up with Jonathan Mosley most of the time. He's brilliant. But, what stopped me from law school, from pursuing it any further, was the cost. I didn't have $250,000. I didn't have $250,000 to go to law school. And I knew, you know, see, I've always been independent in this country. You know, my folks brought me here, but, you know that story. They didn't really help me a whole lot. I didn't have any extended family here. So here I am in a strange country on my own as a teenager, you know, and I started college at 17. So here I'm 18, 19, thinking I'm forced to get degrees I don't want because I wasn't able to go to an aviation college. So here I'm already, you know, and I figured if I could be a lawyer, I could afford flight school. I know that sounds weird, but, you know, I'm thinking like 18, 19 before I knew how the country worked. But anyway, when the airline thing didn't work out, I thought seriously law school. Thought about it a couple times, actually. But the thing that stopped me was I didn't want to be in a position to have all kinds of loans and have to be hunting for a job to pay off those loans and not get that job. I never wanted to be in that position. Now, that to me was the responsible thing to do, but I didn't get to go to law school either. So someone that does go and defaults on their loans, I have nothing but contempt for them because I didn't do it simply because I thought I was doing the responsible thing by not taking on a debt. And I still think I made the right decision, by the way. But to me, it made more sense not to take on that responsibility. And here I am legislating anyway. So I found a way around it. But I might have gone to law school. You know, I probably would have driven the legal professors as nuts as I drove my undergrad professors. Betcha.
Probably, yeah.
All right.
Probably,
you know, I like dropping things just, you know, anyway. All right, so here's one from December 17th. By the way, that's the anniversary of the Wright brothers' first flight, December 17th, okay? 1903, Wilbur and Orville, you know, the bicycle mechanics. So this is the anniversary of the first flight for all you pilots out there who didn't know. How come that's not on the news? All right, anyway.
Wow, in 1903? I didn't realize it was that far back.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is how fast aviation developed. And a lot of it came from the wars. So, you know, you look at the Wright brothers airplane. It didn't even have wheels on it. It took off on a track. And it skidded to a stop. All right. They had the elevators in the front instead of the back. So they had the flaps in the front, you know, that make the airplane, the nose go up and down.
Mm-hmm.
They had what they called wing warping. Oh, maybe they had ailerons. I'm not sure. But originally, they bent the wings at the tips, and that's how they made the airplane bank, and therefore made it able to turn. And they figured out that you had to bank to turn, just like the birds. Oh boy. So anyway, Wilbur and Orville, a couple of non-physicists, a couple of non-experts, you know, a couple of dudes who ran a bike shop, you know, but they had a vision, and they had and they watched the birds and they experimented. They built gliders. And they built on the work of Otto Lilienthal, who was a German glider maker who died in one of his gliders, unfortunately. You know, his last words were, you know, sacrifices have to be made, you know, so we can advance. He was absolutely right. Unfortunately, his passion killed him. But the work of Otto Lilienthal, you know, made it possible for the Wright brothers to make wings. It was based on Lilienthal's gliders. You know,
right.
You got a German glider, you know, maker for his passion, and you got a couple of American bike makers for their passion, and you'll notice that the chain drive, you know, between the engine and the propellers is probably a bicycle chain. So, you know, a little trivia for you there. Yeah, go ahead.
But it's amazing what you can do when you have a dream. When you have a dream and you take steps to make it come true. It's like versus if you have a dream and you just sit on it.
Yeah,
you
can't do that. Nah. Yeah. Got to be fearless.
So, people,
pursue
if you have
dream.
A dream, go for it. Go for it.
Yeah. We certainly are here. I want to get to this article before we get to Derek, because I think this will be very instructive. This is the New York Post, one of my favorite publications now. Been around forever. I think it's the first newspaper in New York. It goes back to like the 1700s. Anyway, so they said today, this is Carrie Sheffield. This is someone you might want to talk to, Jean. She's an independent women's forum. She might make a hell of a guest on the show. And so Independent Women's Voice, excuse me. So Carrie Sheffield, CarrieSheffield, Carrie Sheffield, Senior Policy Analyst at the Independent Women's Voice. And so so the title of the article, Congress's Debt Limit Hike Ignores Our Dangerous Addiction to Spending, which is where I got some of what I was talking about earlier. She says, with 14 Senate Republicans joining Democrats to allow Tuesday's vote to raise the debt ceiling, and I've already shown why that's dumb. It's economic treason is what it really is. She says Congress yet again missed a golden opportunity to stop the fiscal train wreck it's speeding us toward. Lawmakers pat themselves on the back for averting a crisis. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, one of my least favorite people, that's me, Janet Yellen warned the nation could hit the fiscal limit December 15th, but the short-term fix ignores America's unhealthy debt addiction. It's the kind that overstretches and destroys superpowers. We borrow like there's no tomorrow. And I'll say insurrectionist Joe Biden wants to add trillions more to the trillions he's already unleashed this year through his Build Back Broke spending. That's what you call it, Build Back Broke.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, Build Back Broke, exactly. Yeah. On Friday, the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, that would say the nonpartisan CBO. It is partisan, but that's another story. Congressional Budget Office released its latest numbers on this big government bill. Lindsey Graham, the top Republican on the Senate Budget Committee, I saw him speak yesterday, asked the CBO to provide a projection excluding the budgetary gimmicks the left uses to hide the true price tag of the bill. CBO's analysis confirms it would cost $4.9 trillion over 10 years and add $3 trillion in deficit spending. Let's put those in basic numbers. 4.9 is 5. Okay, it's close enough. So you got $5 trillion. It would cost $5 trillion over 10 years and add $3 trillion in deficit spending. Well, if it's going to cost $5 trillion over 10 years, that means they could stop it after the midterms if the geldings actually take power and use it. But that remains to be seen.
Right.
Back to the article. Build Back Broke would also add $266 billion. That's with a B. That's B as in Bob. That's B as in broke. That's B as in, what's a good word for insane that starts with B? Bastards. Yeah. Build Back Broke would also add $266 billion with a B in interest on that debt. Now, as we've talked about before, interest is dead money. Interest is empty money. Interest is like iceberg lettuce. It's empty calories. It doesn't do anything for you. You still have to spend it. Interest is useless. So $266 billion in interest, adding on this interest to top-line cost brings the total to an eye-popping $5.1 trillion. So cost plus interest, $5.1 trillion. That's 5,000 billions. Okay, just to kind of put this in perspective. Article continues, the first recovery step in Alcoholics Anonymous is to admit you've got a problem. American debt-aholics, I like that term, so I'm going to start using that. American debt-aholics, so there's another term. So Carrie, thank you for that for our language change. American debt-aholics, our country is at 126% debt-to-GDP ratio. We talked about this before. Remember when you figured that out, Gene? We talked about how much debt versus how much money we generate? 126% debt-to-GDP ratio means our debt is almost 26% larger than our entire economy every year. That is irrational. we owe more money than we can possibly make in a year through all of our economic activity, all of it.
Right.
You know, from kids that have a paper route to the largest corporations. We cannot generate enough money to pay off this debt. We're 26% short. That's insane. That's irrational. That's economic treason. Yeah.
Right.
Article says that means we have far more debt than the size of our entire annual economic output, which I think is what I just said. Anyway, article says for historical comparison, this is far higher than in 1960, where we had 52% debt to GDP. Okay, that's half. So at one point in 1960, we had half the debt to our entire economic output. Now we have 25% more than our entire economic output. That's insane. In 1980, 35%. Okay, that's Ronald Reagan. And what did Ronald Reagan do? He cut taxes. Cutting taxes increases revenue. Cutting spending lowers the obligations. So it works.
Right.
I'm not making this stuff up. It works. If you cut taxes, you get more money because you get more economic growth. You get more activity. get more activity in the private sector. Increasing government spending doesn't do anything for the economy. In fact, it hurts the economy because that government spending has to come from somebody. Government can't spend money it hasn't taxed or borrowed or printed. None of those things are good. Okay, that's empty money again. Productive money comes from wealth, from labor and raw materials and goods and services, you know, and work, you know, increasing wealth. That's what wealth is. It's work put into goods and services, into raw materials to make finished goods, and into services to make better services for people so their lives are better. That's how you create wealth. Government does not create wealth. It steals wealth and then gives you less of it later. It's like a parasite. So they take so much out of the economy and put some of it back in and call it stimulus. That's the problem. This is why the economy is not better now, even though we spent all this money, because they're always giving back to the economy less than they're taking out of it. So stimulus, government stimulus is actually a deficit. Does that make sense, Gene?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, good. So I'm doing pretty well this morning. Okay, good. I'm happy. All right. So historical comparison, is, all right, so 1980, 35%, and in 2000, which is not that long ago, 2000, we're talking 21 years ago, the debt ratio was 55% debt to GDP. That's only 21 years ago. We had 55%. We had half the debt. We had less than half the debt we have now. Anyway, and like a reckless shopaholic, back to the article, locked in toxic credit card payments, U.S. taxpayers are mired in astronomical interest payments. Yeah, that credit card analogy is not new to me. Okay, that's frequently used because it's very descriptive and it puts it in terms you know people can readily understand because you know, most people have credit cards. Back to the article. This year, Uncle Sam spent $300 billion on interest payments on the national debt. Okay, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget notes that this is almost 9% of all federal revenue and more than $2,400 per household in 1 year alone. Think about that for a second. They spent $300 billion, that's with a B, $300 billion on interest payments. And that's dead money, $300 billion of dead money just to cover the debt that they borrowed that they shouldn't have borrowed. Okay, here's where it gets really sick. The federal government spends more on interest payments on the national debt than on science, space, technology, transportation, and education combined. Let me say that one more time. The federal government spends more on interest payments on the national debt than on science, space, technology, transportation, and education combined. And that's why those things suck, because we're spending money on borrowing from Marxist programs that do nothing but increase the debt and increase the interest payments on the debt, which they are required to pay. They do have to pay those obligations. Okay, so the only thing they're obligating us to is more interest payments, which is dead money. And it takes away from science, space, technology, transportation, and education. Now, you can argue whether they should spend money on education or not. I'm not going to do that. But the point is, that's the trade-off. Interest payments on the debt, which is dead money, or science, space, technology, transportation, and education. Those are choices. Back to the article. The United States has a very highly rated bond profile, so we're unlikely to default on our bonds. But with more and more debt, our very high rating will erode over time through downgrades, which would spike our borrowing costs right back, right in the thick of heavy inflation. It also makes us look like a weak, fading empire, as China's wealth has now overtaken ours and continues to rise. Here's something else, too. If the Fed raises interest rates, what's going to happen to the interest on the national debt? It's going to go up. Okay? If you've got 6% inflation, all right, and you've got interest rises, every time the interest rate goes up a percent, how many billions of dollars is that going to add to the national debt interest? You can't have one without the other. And they don't think of this. They're not thinking of this in Washington because they're debtaholics. I really like that term. Back to the article. I'm going to see if I can finish this before Derek gets on here. It says, we're not anywhere near close to junk bond status, but the Obama administration presided over America's only AAA downgrade by S&P Global Ratings. Yeah. Doesn't that sound familiar? Now it seems – well, there's Derek. Hang on, Derek. I'll get to you in just a second. Now it seems Biden wants a redux of his Obama days. If he keeps pushing for more debt, we will likely face another downgrade, not only another from S&P, but also a first from Fitch and Moody's Investors Service. And it says my former employer. So that's I'll get to her name in a bit. I want to make sure I get through this. Article says another huge problem with what's happening in Washington this week is that the debt ceiling's purpose is to ensure that Treasury doesn't overstep its lane. Congress created the debt ceiling for a reason, to stop Treasury from going outside its executive branch limits and borrowing too much money. Yet prominent Democrats are pushing to eliminate the debt ceiling altogether. Speaker Nancy Pelosi called a House bill that would give the Treasury Secretary the authority to raise the debt limit an excellent idea. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen raised the debt limit? Yellen, no surprise, supports eliminating the debt limit altogether. Yeah, no kidding. Debtaholics. Congress controls the purse strings under the Constitution's separation of powers. Removing the debt ceiling would give more power to the executive branch, which might be what King Biden wants. Americans told Harvard University and Harris X pollsters in May that they believe, quote, massive government spending is the top driver of inflation. Well, yes and no. Since second was significant injections of money by the Federal Reserve, and third, that would be printing money, by the way, and third, uncontrollable government deficits. Biden's team is bullheadedly pushing all three ailments on us and our future. The least we can do is call our members of Congress and tell them to block this wasteful Build Back Broke socialist scheme. Democrat Senators Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, seem to get it. They're calling for America to stop its long-term debt addiction instead of just giving another immediate payment to our debt pushers. Well, there's another good term, debt pusher. These senators need all the help they can get. And this is Carrie Sheffield, senior policy analyst at Independent Women's Voice. Yeah, I definitely want to contact her. So Gina and I are going to wrestle for who gets to contact her first. It's because she sounds wonderful. All right, let's talk money here, and we'll be right back with Derek.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
Yes, it's my regular excursion into the fallacy of the debt ceiling argument that we have to raise the debt ceiling to meet our obligations instead of lowering our obligations to meet the debt ceiling. That's kind of the theme today. Good morning, Derek.
Hey, morning. How you doing?
I'm actually doing pretty well, although we got off to a rather strange start. My computer froze up about 7 minutes before showtime, and I couldn't clear it. So I had to shut it down, restart, right. And I think we started like a minute late, but who cares? You know, it's in the grand scheme of things, life is good. Did you see that article in the New York Post by Carrie Sheffield, the one I was just reading from?
I did.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I was going to send it to you. I meant to send it to you. I'm sorry. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it definitely, you know, from what it describes sounds pretty spot on. You know, I mean, the bottom line is for me, you know, I mean, the market, since we talked last, you know, we had already seen about a 5% pullback, you know, now we're like 6 or 7%. We're going down again today. You know, so I think, I mean, I kind of expected toward the end of the year, we were going to see a little 10%, touch up. I don't
10%
know.
10% is a touch-up? Wait a minute. 10% is a touch-up? That's 10%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, 10% is normal. You know what I mean? So statistically,
oh, it is. Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah, statistically, you know, it says that you'll see a 30% correction every 10 years.
Okay.
Every 5 years, you'll see 5 to 7, 10%. Pullbacks, and then every 3 or 1 to 3, you'll see 6 to 8, 5% pullbacks. You know, so I mean, and while that sounds like a lot, I mean, you know, look at what, you know, the market has done over the past 5 years, you know, so I mean, that's hard to explain to some people who have seen nothing but great returns, you know,
right.
And people get used to that, you know, they get very complacent. So they're just like, okay, you know, I'm expecting to see a 20, 25% return the whole time, you know? And I'm like, that's setting unrealistic expectations.
what do they do for tax purposes? Do they do it to sell stock before the new year or take their profits this year? Is there a lot of it tax-based or not?
Some of it is, you know, I mean, so
okay.
That's called tax harvesting, you know, so. You know, I mean, I just had the discussion with some people, you know, I mean, if you have some losses and you have some gains, I mean, definitely if these things are not poised to do well, I mean, that's a decision to offload them, take a loss to reduce your tax liability. You know, so there are strategies to do that. And, you know, sometimes it makes sense for people. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, so we try to take advantage of that. I mean, now, you know, the stuff that's going on in the market right now is definitely exacerbated by, you know, some of the financials that are going on, some of the, you know, some of the inflation You know, I mean, obviously the Fed came out with a decision, hey, looks like we're going to raise interest rates sooner than thought, you know, which I've been saying for a long time. You know, I mean, the market actually reacted positive to that. I mean, it had a turnaround of almost 2% in one day. And then the next day it was just kind of more bad news with, you know, like profit misses on some of the companies, you know, folks saying, hey, this Omicron variant is now going to be the dominant variant, even though that it's more mild than the Delta, you know,
yeah, the mild Omicron variant.
Yeah, now they've got more lockdowns in certain cities and things coming, more mask mandates and things. So that really is kind of exacerbating what's going on in the market right now.
You know, I'm surprised.
You know, the market doesn't.
Well, I'm surprised. Sorry, you want to finish your point there? I think I just jumped in too fast.
No, that's fine. The market doesn't like to see that type of stuff. You know, I mean, it scares investors. And I think what you're seeing right now is a lot of investors on the fence, you know, with the whole wait and see, you know, let's see what happens kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm surprised that nobody in the investment community of writers hasn't noticed the fact that the government has done everything possible to maintain COVID. They're not curing it. They're not stopping it. The vaccines are creating the maybe it's a little too controversial. Maybe they can't say this, you know, working for the Wall Street Journal and some of the other publications, but the Independent Journal certainly can. But the variants, you know, are coming up. They're following a new vaccine. We had no variants until the vaccine was distributed. It's not a vaccine, by the way. I say that for convenience. But the GMO shot that people started getting in December of 2020, Delta didn't show up until after that. The cases were worse
right.
in 2021 than they were in 2020. So the vaccine,
yeah.
which is not a vaccine, you know, caused far more viruses and problems. And of course, we know the deaths. And Gene lost a cousin tragically to the remdesivir ventilator death. You know, and so they're causing problems. And hasn't anybody, I mean, the market people, they're not stupid. Now, maybe they can't say things, but hasn't anybody got the balls, quite frankly, in a figurative sense, to just get up and say, wait a minute, the government is causing this. The mask mandates, the lockdowns, you know, all these restrictions, everything that they did, the destruction of entire small business enterprises all across the country, the stress. And I've talked about this in different parts of the show, but this is from an economic point of view. Hasn't anybody noticed that the tragedy, the stress, the lack of the lowering of people's immune system, the lost businesses, life savings, and everything else is a breeding ground for viruses? They take advantage of human misery. You know, everything the government's
right.
done, everything the government's done has been to preserve and perpetuate the virus. If they left it alone, it would have been gone by July, but they didn't. And from
yeah,
a financial standpoint,
it's
been tragic, and no one's saying anything about it.
You know that there are some things that should have let it run its course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a flu bug. You know, I mean, you can try to fight it all you want. You know, your best option, you know, for the virus is to let it run its course. Now, I mean, you can do the vaccine. I'm not saying don't vaccine. I'm not saying the vaccine doesn't help. I'm not
well,
arguing
personal choice.
That. I'm just,
yeah.
Right. I mean, it's a personal choice. I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, any virus is going to run its course. And I mean, if you're trying to resist that, I think my personal opinion is all you're doing is postponing the inevitable. You know, you know, I'm not saying people shouldn't take precautions. I'm not saying, you know, you shouldn't wear a mask. I'm not saying, you know, that you shouldn't do certain things to, you know, boost your immune system, maybe be more healthy. I mean, you know, do what you want. You know, I mean, those are the risks you take as a human every day. I mean, these people that, you know, there's just as much people, just as much deaths from heart disease every year as there is from COVID right now. You know, actually last year, I think there was more. And this year, COVID's a little bit higher than heart disease, you know, for the first time ever. You know, but the fact is, it's like nobody is going to stop eating salt. You know, like nobody's gonna
I don't buy those
gonna
figures.
Start
though.
Walking every day, or you know, or
yeah.
doing anything more healthy, or getting more physical. You know, I mean, like they're just like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and take that risk of dying from heart disease. You know, and it's kind of the same thing with flu. You know, I mean, it's do you want to take a certain risk? Do you want to keep yourself more healthy? Do you want to get yourself in shape? Now, granted, there are some people that, you know, you can have all that stuff done and you will be naturally selected. You know, it's you have an immune system that, you know, is not prepared to fight against that that virus. And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, there are people that are lost that were perfectly healthy. And I mean, you know, I mean, how many cases are those specifically? You know, I would say they're probably one in 100,000, you know, I mean, you know, so I'm not saying go play the odds, but people play the odds all the time. I don't know why this one's, you know, so or treated so different other than the news perpetuates fear.
It's interesting. You don't get a cold from cold. You get a cold from a virus, you know, and a coronavirus at that. You know, it's
right.
It's fascinating. But all those figures you read, as with coronavirus exceeding heart deaths, that those are not those are distorted because the CDC itself reported that only 6%. And I've even heard as low as 4%. But only 6% of the deaths with COVID are actually from COVID. So if you take 800,000 people. And you say, let's do 5% just for the sake of simplicity. So 5% of 800,000, that would be 80,000. Half of that would be 40,000. So you're looking at a little over 40,000 people that have actually died from COVID with nothing else. Okay, 40,000 is about half the number of people that die from the flu every year. So the actual death from COVID is like 40,000 people a year, maybe a little more this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, 40,000, that's not even an epidemic. You know, that's a flu season. That's half a flu season. We don't consider the flu an epidemic every year. So if you want to put it in perspective,
yeah.
You know, if you're looking at the 800,000 plus figure, that's the wrong figure. That's people who died with COVID. Well, those same people died with probably obesity, heart disease, diabetes, maybe cancer, maybe everything else, you know, failure of various organs. So these are distorted figures.
Yeah.
So to say, you know, and this is where I get driven nuts because these numbers aren't real. They're making this stuff up to make COVID look worse than it really is with its less than 1% mortality.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think the news is very good at making you feel safe. You know, I mean, you know,
well,
the,
not
news,
the, job.
The news, yeah, definitely.
It's not the government's job either, but yeah, that's another story. Yeah.
Their job is to you know, perpetuate fear, you know, mm-hmm. and to basically keep you worried. You know, I mean, that's how they get their ratings. You know, I mean, if they told you, I personally always believe that the good outweighs the bad. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not talking about, you know, in our government and things like that. I'm talking about just in general in life, you know.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. You know, and I think there's a lot to be happy for and be thankful for. And I just don't think that people, you know, with the news, they're not really trained to look for that. You know what I mean? They're trained to look for all the good they're trained to look for all the bad, the negativity. And then that comes through in what type of a person they are. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that's everybody, but, you know, I mean, I know some people, they come in and I mean, they look at the market and they're just kind of like, you know, oh gosh, where's the beating coming now? You know, it's like, you know, what do you expect? You know, I mean, do you expect it always to be positive? Would you like to always come in here and hear good news when all you do is watch negativity on TV? You know,
yeah.
I mean? So, you know, I mean, and I try to bring light to that. I mean, I don't do that to be ugly, but I just tell people, I'm like, if you want a market update that makes you have more confidence in what you're doing, don't look at the news. You know, do not look at the news. The news is going to tell you that you're going to die. You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
The
government's going to tell you that,
you've
too. Government used to protect life, liberty, and property, and now they perpetuate fear. But here's something else. I mean, we still have to get to our financial board. We haven't started that yet. I mean, one more question for you. The government is in the pharmaceutical business. You've got Moderna and the National Institute for Health wrestling over, you know, who's going to get more of the money from these, you know, made up GMO shots. Why is the government even in business at all? And is there a financial report on the government business of big pharma? Anything on that?
I'm wanting to say that I've seen something, you know, I've actually seen something here recently. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'd have to go look. With something like Big Pharma, the title is like, you know, Big Pharma is out for you, or Big Money makes money off of you, or something like that.
No, government's in business. And it'd be, I think, Dun & Bradstreet, don't they? The CDC is a business.
Which has been again?
I think Dun & Bradstreet, the big, you know, financial analysis that do all the information, they log every business. I think the CDC is listed on Dun & Bradstreet. I don't think that, well, not as a business. I mean, they call them a government regulatory agency, but why are they on Dun & Bradstreet? Why are they listed as, unless all government agencies are? but they're a profit maker. I mean, they have licenses and patents. You know, certainly Dr. Fascist has a ton of patents. He's got like over 1,000 patents. You know, he's in business.
Yeah.
So why are these government people, is there any financial report on the government businesses? The business, and, you know, and like in socialist countries, the government, you know, nationalizes the business. I'm not talking about that. That'd be like an Amtrak thing. You know, government runs Amtrak. Okay? They had a loss. That's a different thing. But you've got government agencies wrestling over private profits. Someone should be analyzing that. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I mean, everybody talks about these, you know, these vaccines, and everybody should get vaccinated and things like that. You know,
we
what I mean,
don't talk about that.
I personally,
the last thing we talk about.
Well, I personally believe that if they lifted the law that protects the vaccine companies, that they could be sued for, you know, damages to people. I think I think you'd have like 90% of people having the vaccine right now. You know, like I don't personally believe that you'd have a problem if you can sue, you know, Purdue Pharma for the opioid pandemic, you know what I mean, or for the opioid epidemic, whatever they want to call it, for the opioid crisis, for whatever, you know, for something. I mean, people were prescribed, you know, and if the doctor does keep prescribing, I mean, the doctor should have some type of liability, but, you know, nobody forced
them. It's called
them
malpractice insurance. Yeah.
Right, right. Nobody forced them to take that medicine, and then the people that kept taking it, you know what I mean, they were making a conscious choice to take that medicine.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I'm not saying that you know, they're not absolved of responsibility when the doctor told them to do it. But, you know, the doctor normally has a right to, or has a, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, has the know-how
the
to
duty?
Say, okay, you're only going to get, you know, 90 days of this. And then after that, you don't get any more, you know, you know, so, you know, I'm not saying they're all off the hook, that they're all not bad, that they all weren't pushing things. I'm not going to say that at all. But just like you said, that's why you have malpractice insurance. You go back after the doctor. So, I mean, if they can sue Purdue Pharma, why can't we be suing Pfizer for people that have problems that come from this vaccine?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because we do have a bill on that. I wrote it myself about a year ago. So we, you know, writeyourlaws.com. It's right there. So if you want to write an article about that bill and put that in the financial, you know, editorial areas, I don't know if your company would you know, want you to do that, but you know, someone's got to write about it. You know, I write, because the bill is there, and it very simply says that where it says in the law. I can pull up for next time. I don't pull up right now. We only got a few more minutes with you. But it very simply says where the law says that vaccine manufacturers shall not be liable for their products. I just took out the word not. It says vaccine manufacturers shall be liable. I mean, that's how simple the change is. You take out one word, one three-letter word, and they're now able to be sued. I mean, it's just that simple. Now, the willpower to do it is something else. That's where the problem is. But the bill is there.
Right.
Anybody can go to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com, go to the legislation item on the menu bar, scroll down to all proposed laws. I think it's like the fourth or fifth one, but it's right there, right there next to our Section 230 Communications Decency Act rewrite, where I took a little section, Section C of Section 230, rewrote it, and that prevents big tech from censoring. Okay, the legislative changes are actually, and this is something I didn't know until I started doing this, but the legislative changes are so deceptively simple. I mean, as long as you go to the right law and figure out what to do, this stuff's easy. I've got another bill, which you might be really interested in, which I wrote a while ago too. This one covers a 30-day comment period for any budget item over $100 million. Now, I don't know if that's a good figure or not. I mean, we'll get some economic analysts to Congress can change that. But the thing is, there should be a 30-day comment period. So this $5 trillion spending Build Back Broke from the debtaholics. I'm using Carrie Sheffield's words for the New York Post article. There should be a 30-day comment period where they have to disclose everything that's in it. Everybody should take a look. And you know who'd be the most informed?
Yeah.
It'd be the members of Congress that have to vote on it.
Right.
But we've got the legislation. We've got the citizen legislation to fix these problems. But the biggest problem is having folks share it, having folks write about it, getting it out there, having media report on it, and build the consensus around the legislation that Congress is incapable of writing, that we are very capable of writing, and can go exactly to the problem. Because you know, the folks that write bills here, me, Pianchi, Dr. Pry, various different, Jonathan Mosley, you know, all the folks that are writing bills, folks I don't even know, who sent me legislation, good citizen legislation, one on grants, is fabulous. You know, I got a bill on mandatory prenuptial agreements. I mean, it's fascinating what people send in. It's really incredible. Genius of American people is outstanding once you let them go. And say, okay, here's your opportunity. This is why this is going to be so fascinating once we break out and start have a few million listeners. But this is the potential is there. The bills are written. The work is done. The system works. We've proven it. Everything is ready to go for a citizen revolution of legislation that we consent to be governed by. Not that we're going to force anything. We're not, you know, we're not an insurrection. We're operating within the Constitution, but we're a better source of bills than Congress. You know, everybody else is a special interest. You look at Big Pharma writes bills for Big Pharma. Big Agriculture writes bills for Big Agriculture. We write bills for everybody because we don't make money off our legislation. And we don't have a special interest. That's why it's better.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, take a look at those bills. All proposed laws, part of the legislation menu of writeyourlaws.com. And that goes for all our listeners, too. If you missed it, check the podcast. It'll be out in about an hour. All right, let's get to the financial report before we totally forget it.
Yeah. What's no problem. All right, give me just 1 second here. Yeah. All right. Well, this is Derek Park of Ever Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. U.S. equities reversed their morning gains and finished lower, weighted by weakness in technology and growth stocks. While yesterday's market rally toward new highs conveyed confidence that the Fed tightening will help lower inflation without derailing economic growth, today's pullback reflects some valuation concerns and liquidity is now gradually withdrawn. Cyclical sectors outperformed with financials, materials, and energy leading. European stocks bucked the trend, finishing more than 1% higher, and ECB said that rate hikes in 2022 are very unlikely. Oil rose. The U.S. dollar declined, and the 10-year government bond fell to 1.43%. All right. U.S. equities closed lower today, with the Dow Jones down 0.09 or 31 points to 35,897. The NASDAQ closed down 385 points or 2.47% to 15,180. And the S&P 500 closed down 41 points or 0.9 to 4669. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up $1.14 or 1.61% to $72.01. And the spot price of gold was up $34 or 1.95% to $17.98.90. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Just looking over my notes here, I write furiously away during your report. European stocks are up. What's going on in Europe? They're not obviously affected by the Build Back Brandon insurrection. So what's going on there?
You know, I'd have to go look. I don't know right off the top of my head, but okay. I did see so in Europe, I did see – so they said that they weren't going to raise rates in 2022, but I did see an article that said different than that. That they were talking about a 0.25% rate hike in the first quarter, which is pretty much what we're talking about doing. I've got some conflicting information, so I'm going to have to do some looking. I don't know what's going on. They are very restrictive over there versus us that you've got certain states that are being restrictive.
So here's my question, though. So when does the European Union allow individual nations to deficit spend or have massive inflation or borrow outrageously like we're doing, or are those countries still independent enough that they run their own budgets? The union's more for trade and things like that. I mean, how strong is the European Union government, the bureaucrats in Brussels?
I'd have to look at a comparison. I want to say the UK is like 8% of the GDP. I would have to go look. So I mean,
UK is Brexit
decent,
though. UK is out of the European Union though. They left.
They are, but I was talking about UK is by itself. They have an impact. So their market is independent. It's not a European market. You know, I mean, each people have their own. It's not a European market. It is a. It's their stock exchange, and I'd have to go look at it, which stock exchange it is and why it is. I know China just had some problems, or the Shanghai, whatever their one's called, they had some issues because inflation's starting to hit China.
China has a stock market? A communist country has a stock market? Call me crazy, but I see a little contradiction here. Gene, feel free to join our conversation here if any of this strikes you as interesting. China has a stock market?
They do.
So
they do.
Okay, so all right, let's do this for next week. I'm going to put a big note on my calendar. Are you available next week? I think it's going to be Christmas Eve. That's our anniversary show, by the way.
Know, I will actually,
okay,
and actually for that week and the following week, I'm out of town both times. So
okay,
you're going to have
we'll
to
do when you come back
2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll do it when you come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's China. I love it. China, communist country, has stock market. All right, so here's a question too. If the European Union, right, it's Chinese stock market, it's going to be fun for us to take a look at. Yeah, I'm going to have to get you for an hour sometime. We're going to have to spend more time on some of this stuff. All right, so if the European Union is not spending as recklessly as we are and not borrowing as recklessly as we are, that means they're going to be more competitive because they're not going to have to spend as much money on interest payments. They're actually going to be able to be more competitive than us, and money might be attracted to them because they don't have as big a deficit as we do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. I'd have to go do some research on their market because I don't know enough about it to
okay.
speak. You know, I know
well, these are
one
questions
point in time,
you know, for future. We can kind of
my
play with,
my
yeah.
company tried going over there and you know starting their business and mm-hmm. I guess you know it being American based was not welcomed very well, so it was very short lived.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think
I can't remember.
Huh.
Exactly when that was, but you know, I know that it's in the history.
So this is what I was wondering: if, like, the London stock market, does it have to cooperate with the European Union government, or is it, or are they still independent? That's what I'd be curious about.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. Like I said,
okay.
I'd have to go look. I know that Brexit is going on; that they're walking away from it.
Yeah.
I know I see articles every once in a while that you know speak to how it's going. But you know, if it's not something that's like current that has a huge impact on, you know, the market, our market, when they said that they were going to leave the European Union, you know, started going through some negativity. I mean, we started seeing some volatility based on that. You know, I mean,
yeah.
even Greece's economy. Let's go back about 4 or 5 years. You know, when Greece's economy completely fell apart, they defaulted on their bonds. I mean. You know, I mean, everything just went to crap. And I mean, I think Greece is like 2.5 or 3% of the world's GDP. Our market went through like a 10% pullback for that. You know,
yeah.
It was like, you know, something so minute. You know, I mean, obviously we trade with that country, and I mean, there's things that going on. So
mm-hmm.
I'm sure the same thing would be happening, you know, with Europe. So when they announced that they were leaving the European Union, yeah, I mean, there was our market went through some turmoil with that. So, but, you know, where is it at now, I guess, is kind of would be the question. So
yeah.
if it's things that I don't see have a direct impact on our market, I kind of don't look at them because I try to focus on what's really affecting our market. Maybe that has minor to do with it, but it's not the major things.
Yeah, I just got a note, too, a little side thing. Jim can't make it today, so we have a little extra time. If you've got a few more minutes, we can continue with our chat. And then when you have to go, we'll leave it. And then I have an interesting article I talked to Gene about before the show. We'll see if we can get into that. It's more psychological stuff, totally different to change. Devaluing the dollar. You mentioned that in the report. And I'm wondering, mm-hmm. you know, with interest rates make money more expensive, you know, the cost of borrowing goes up, which means the interest on the national debt is going to go up and everything else is going to be more expensive because the cost of money is going up. And if they raise the interest rates, if they devalue the dollar, that's going to have the same effect too. So each dollar is now worth less. It's going to take more of them to have the same purchasing power to pay off the debts and do the things they want to do. Considering our dollar is worth like 4 cents of what it was in 1913 when the Fed, you know, came in to destroy our economy and take over our monetary system, my words, folks, okay, how much did the dollar devalue? And did all the other currencies devalue too, or did we suddenly devalue? And is this for trade? Because I know if we devalue the dollar, it costs less, you know, imports cost less. Or our
That's
goods
right.
cost less because our dollars worth less. It takes fewer dollars. It takes fewer dollars of other people outside the country to buy the same goods. You know, a good that cost $10, you know, 6 months ago may still cost $10, but the $10 is worth less, so they're actually spending less money on it because of the currency trade. So where was our dollar? Where is our dollar? who's, you know, if you got a few minutes to kind of sort of this whole devaluing of the currency thing, I don't think people really understand it. And that would include me. Why the whys and wherefores? Because to me, it makes no sense at all. It means if your money is worth less, your country's worth less. That's how I look at it.
So, you know, I guess what you're looking for is, you know, purchasing power, you know, comparison, and then where the value of the currency is. I don't think there's an accurate representation of that right now. You know, I mean, Okay. Obviously inflation took over. If you take anybody's currency, like go over to, you know, the UK, let's take Australia, for example, because Australia's got an extremely stable system. So does New Zealand, right?
Okay.
So take them, you know, their bonds are worth probably the most and have the best protection because they've literally like never defaulted. You know, the USA can't say that, right? We had an issue back in 2014 where we went from a AAA to a AA, basically.
Yeah, we talked about that. Obama.
Yeah, they can't pay the bills on time. So let's use like Australia and New Zealand for an example.
Okay.
If you take their currency and you say, okay, what's the purchasing power of their currency? Well, while it is a smidgen better than ours, they go through the same cycles we do, you know. So they go through the same cycles where their currency is worth a little bit less, their economy's got to recover, you know, they have to do things. But if you look at purchasing power, you go back to, say, 1920 or, you know, go back 100 years and say, okay, what did a dollar buy then? You know, you're going to get almost the same ratio. It's not going to be any different because inflation – you know, goods and services get more expensive. So, I mean, it's all the same. So I don't look at, you know, the fact that a dollar doesn't buy more as a bad thing, because I think in society, that's got to happen with the way things are going. Okay. Now, keeping things in hindsight, okay, if you're going to say a valuation of a dollar, where is it at? Well, I mean, there's multitude of things that control that, right? You're talking about inflation has an impact on that. Government spending has an impact on that. Government printing money has an impact on that. You know, obviously, if they print more money and more money's in circulation, where's the value of your dollar? It's not going to be very well.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be lower. Therefore, you know, kind of producing, you know, economic goods that are cheaper, so, you know, other people can go buy them. But if their country is going through inflation at the same time, how much goods do you really think they're going to buy?
Their currency is going down too.
Right.
So it's the relative.
So it's almost
the currency is relative. So there's a relativity factor, because our currency is relative to other currencies. Our currency is devaluing incredibly to what it was, but if all the other currencies are devaluing at approximately the same rate, then you've still got a stable market, and just everybody ends up printing more money and doing more stupid things. It doesn't help the overall economy, but in relative terms, we're still competitive, even though we're devaluing our currency.
Absolutely. Have you heard the word global recession?
So, yes. You know. Is that where we're in now?
Say that again.
I mean, I haven't heard the word recession. That's almost like a dirty word, you know, in economic circles, because Brandon's going to get all pissed off if he hears the word recession, you know, because, you know, they don't want to talk about that, even though that's what they're causing.
Nobody knows. I mean, like, you know, people say, okay, hey, there are key economic factors when we're going to have a recession, right? You know, and there's reasons we can have a recession. There's reasons we cannot have a recession. You know, I mean, they call the COVID pullback a recession because it met the criteria for a recession, right? So it was considered a very small but quick recession, right?
It was artificial. It was a government recession because they're the ones that locked down everything. There was no economic reason for it.
Recession is recession according to the market. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah.
You know,
that's
the way the market sees it. You know what I mean? We have this nice little chart that shows you why we had the recession. You know what I mean? So we put the blame where it's at. I mean, just like you said, you shut down the world. Yeah, you're going to have a recession. That's going to happen. same thing again, you know, so if you look at it like this, everybody's having inflation, you know, everybody's going through the same thing we did where we injected a bunch of money in the economy. People didn't work. You know, I mean, there's going to be some fallout from that. When nobody's able to predict that. I mean, like, really, you know, I'm not trying to scare the heck out of everybody. We could be in a recession cycle right now and not even know it. You're not going to know it until it's announced. It's a lagging indicator, you know. So you're just like, oh, hey, we're in a recession. You know, oh, great.
Yeah,
what do we do?
They say when you were in a recession. No one says you are in a recession. They say you were, because it takes two quarters of negative or zero growth or what?
Yeah.
How does it work?
It's negative GDP. Two quarters, two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. So, you know, typically, you know, 6 months, but when that 6 months goes by, you're like, oh, you know, hey, here we are. We're in a recession. You know, so I guess look at it like this. Here we are, I guess, I don't want to say we're negative GDP, but I would say that we're probably, by the time we finish this quarter, we're going to be pretty dang close. You know, so.
Well, what's the producer price index is up like 9.6%. I remember reading some article about that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that
means. You sent that other article to me. So, you know,
okay.
I mean, and I read that. So, you know, I mean, that's basically saying that, hey, people are scared, you know, so, I don't know because it's around Christmas time if the retail market has seen an impact from it yet. You know, so, you know, when the retail market starts feeling it, which I think is probably going to come next quarter, you know, and I don't know that for certainty. I mean, like when I was on a week or so ago and I thought our labor report was going to be good. The labor report actually wasn't all that bad. It was a very average labor report, but the market had a temper tantrum. You know what I mean? The market was just like, nope, I'm not having
that expectation.
You know, so.
Yeah, I love that word expectation, whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, so, I mean, you know, I didn't have expectations. I just didn't really think it's bad. And I think all the pullbacks that we're having right now, and I mean the volatility that we're having right now, is very exacerbated. I don't think that it's fundamentals that we have right now, the pullbacks are warranted. I don't at all.
Excuse me, I had to mute myself for a second there. Pullback what exactly? I mean, what's being pulled back? Seems like everything's being spent. I don't think they seem to be pulling back at all. Pullbacks in investing, you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about the market in general.
Okay. All right. So, I see. In other words, it's a declining market. Yeah. So none of this makes much sense to me. Gene, if you have a question about this, feel free to weigh in. And you don't have to be, you know, as nerdy as we are when it comes to financial stuff. You know, I think I tend to get in the weeds with everybody because I have folks on that talk about stuff I know about, you know, guns, economics, you know, law, stuff like that I've studied for years and years. So it's a different situation. But trying to think what else is going on. I think we've covered pretty much everything I was thinking of in terms of we know the gas prices are up. We know the price of oil is up. We know we're spending a ridiculous amount of money. Well, let's talk about the overall grand effect here. So if you have, if they spend $5 trillion on Build Back Broke, if they become the debtaholics, if the interest rates go up, if the inflation goes up, if the cost of, you know, if they print a bunch more money and the dollar gets devalued, all these things make everything more expensive. The cumulative effect of everything that's going on, if we had to take a look at this, there's nothing good happening. We're spending too much. We're printing too much. They've got to raise interest rates to try and slow things down, but that's going to make the national debt payments are going to go up because those are earth payments. So everything's going to keep going up. You know, you're almost guaranteeing a recession or worse. This is economic suicide if you put all this together.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that the fundamentals for it to be terraformed are happening right now.
Terraformed. Explain terraform. What's that?
So, you know, I mean, terraform, you know, you're basically setting the groundwork for something to be built. You know, does that make sense? You know, like
I've
like,
never heard the word.
You know, it's more of a geographical term.
Okay.
You know, but you know, when you're terraforming an area to become, you know, become a certain ecosystem and things like that, it's you know, you, Greg, you're a smart man. You never heard the word terraform? Let me.
Well, I'm not that smart. Well, I know terra means earth. You know, I know that much. So I don't know what form means. You know, form is when you make things. So I guess make things of the earth is how I would have to analyze it. But yeah, gee, I don't know everything. Jeez, guys, give me a break. You know, when I don't know things, I ask. This is how I know things is when I don't know something, I ask. But no, I had never heard that term before, terraform. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So transform a planet so as to resemble the earth, especially so that it can support human life.
Oh, that's the Genesis Project from Star Trek. I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, it means earth, but there are certain climates and things, you know, that have been terraformed and things like that. So, you know, that's where I was getting it from.
Let's talk about the climate for a bit because was it Elon Musk said some really interesting things that there should be no subsidies of corporations. I should have pulled this out. First of all, we had more time than I expected we were going to have, which is good. But what about something like that? And this is one of the things I'll be working on is I'd love to get rid of the ethanol subsidy. I'd love to get rid of farm price supports. I'd love to get rid of corporate welfare. I mean, just as I like to get rid of personal welfare. But we're spending mm-hmm. Billions of dollars in tax credits that corporations have gotten because they're rich enough to buy them. You know, the pharmaceuticals were rich enough to buy immunity that Joe's Widget Company has. So you get some little local manufacturer or regional manufacturer of some good. They can be sued for product liability. But the largest multi-trillion-dollar pharmaceuticals, the most sued company the company that's paid the biggest fines in the world for corrupt criminal practices is Pfizer. Didn't they have like a $4 billion penalty for something they did that was horrible not that long ago, a few years ago? So this is a company that routinely – well, let me ask Gene. Gene, can you do me a huge favor, please? Can you look up Pfizer's, settlement, fine, penalty or something? It's like $4 billion. It's a huge thing for corrupt practices. If you can check that, it would be great. They're a very corrupt company. And yet they're the ones that have bought vaccine immunity. I mean, that's insane too. That makes no – why would you give immunity to the company that has the largest corporate fine in history? That's like rewarding bank robbers with a free bank.
I did see an article. So since you're talking that, I did see an article that the CEO of Pfizer used to be the agricultural chief, in the White House, and was the agricultural chief for like 2 years. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, they went from CEO to Pfizer to – hold on a second. Let me see if I can find this real quick.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
CEO of Pfizer, so I can say
this. Let me play you a
PSA.
Right. Let me take a minute here. I'm going to play you my vaccine PSA. And I'll show you – I'll give you the action radio, according to Greg Penglis' view of – here it is. I'll be right. So I'll give you a minute to check this out. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. All right. Let's make sure I'm unmuted here. Okay, there we go. Okay, good. I found something really interesting. Yeah, what did you find? Go ahead.
Former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb joined the board of directors at drug maker Pfizer about 2 months after stepping down as the head of the U.S. drug regulator of the FDA. So keep this in mind. He did this June of 2019. Mm-hmm. The pandemic started January of 2020. Is that not scary?
that is. Run that one more time just to make sure I've got this straight. So what did he do in June?
He left the FDA and joined the board of directors as drug maker Pfizer, at drug maker Pfizer about 2 months. After stepping down as the U.S. drug regulator, and this was June of 2019.
Fascinating. I'll put that in my timeline. I have a COVID timeline that's rather big. Here's what I found. Pfizer faces $21 billion in fines for Pharmacia's crimes, 32 other companies on the hook. And this is actually from February 18, 2009. So this is older news, so you wouldn't hear about it as much. This is back when CBS actually, it looks like they reported the news. So the jury verdict in Wisconsin could expose Pfizer to up to $21 billion in fines after the company was found guilty of gaming Medicaid. It will likely prompt a wave of settlements from other drug companies that are on the hook for this raft of cases. Pfizer, as the successor in interest of its acquisition of Pharmacia, I guess that's the company they bought, must pay only $9 million under the current decision. Okay. That's what I want to talk about, what they might do. Let's talk about what they do have to pay. And here's one from NBC News. Pfizer to pay record $2.3 billion penalty. And this is from September 2nd of 2009. NBC News. Federal prosecutors hit Pfizer with a record-breaking $2.3 billion in fines and called the drug giant a repeating corporate cheat for illegal drug promotions that ply doctors with messages and resort junkets. Strong arms. They're corrupt lobbyists.
I remember Pharmacia now.
Yeah. Do you know what really pissed me off, though? When they had Big Bird. When Pfizer used Big Bird to push the vaccines on Sesame Street. That made me furious.
Yeah.
And Rand Paul's not too happy with it either. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I gotta clean it up here, Greg. I gotta get on to work today.
No problem.
All right. Good chat. Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, have a wonderful Christmas and Happy New Year. Have a great trip, and we'll talk after the holidays.
Yes, sir. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Derek.
Happy holidays.
Seems
weird that in 2 weeks, yes, it's going to be 2022 or 200. Yeah, wow,
2022. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Time goes on. Action Radio will be – I think it's going to be a banner year for Action Radio. I think we're going to be able to do some amazing things. And what really makes the show, you know, is all the people that are involved. You, Derek, Jim, Chappie. You know, I go through my list of people, you know, Jonathan, Cindy, you know, David on Wednesday. I have to find out what happened to him. I'm still not sure. Our Tuesday group, Shelby, Josie, Paulette, Chansey, and, of course, Monday, Dr. Pry. We've got a pretty incredible group of individuals, I think, that make this all work.
And all unique, you know what I mean? Different conversations.
Yeah. We sure are different. Well, what do you want to hear? Do you want to hear the Christmas greeting thing again? Do you want to hear the new normal church and grocery store? Or, well, let me play my Milton promotion. I haven't played that for a while. We'll take a couple minutes on this. And then what we can do is let's talk about the differences in IQ between men and women, which I thought was fascinating. And we can do, I think we forgot your TikTok thing too. So I want to make sure, maybe do TikTok first, then we can get into, let's get into a sexist debate. And we'll be back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912 and still booking national acts. We have Scoop's Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you're tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle, near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen. It's funny, I gave that to the Chamber of Commerce here, and so hopefully they've been able to do some good things with it. All right, left a little music on the end just in case I had any announcements. I really don't. So I'll let this, I'll get on a couple other things I want to play for you guys, and then we'll be back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page 1. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive,
and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Oh, we have so much fun here. We only have about 35 minutes left in the show today, and so that's probably a little off from, start this morning, so we seem to be fixing that. Everything seems to be working pretty well now. So I found an article. Let me see if I can get to this here. Oh, that's not the right one I want. I think it got moved. Where is my article? Yeah, here we go. So this is one of my things that I subscribe to, and I try and get a lot of interesting websites that you don't normally hear about or see about. I never do trending stuff. You know, I don't care whatever the trend is, I'm not going to read it because I don't want trending information. I want interesting stuff that is not trending. I want stuff that no one's talking about. You know, I want to sort of dig into things that I find interesting. And one of the most interesting websites is Intellectual Takeout. In fact, I got about three articles from them. They write about different things. But the one that caught my attention this morning is the truth about gender IQ differences. You know, we men and women are always comparing ourselves. Gene and I constantly, this is why I love having Gene on, because I've had a couple of guys here that would limit our perspective, that would change how we see things. And so because we're different, because, you know, we're, especially the whole Mars-Venus thing, which I think there's a lot of truth to that. Our brains are wired different. We think differently. We act differently. We have different priorities. And that's what makes the world go around, yin and yang. You know, they're complementary, unless they're not. We've all had, you know, clashes and things. But it was interesting, if we can look at this without, you know, putting it in a sexist or, you know, I'm better than you kind of thing. This is an article about better or worse. It's an article about difference. And I find the difference very interesting in ways that I never even thought about. So let me just do this. It's by Walter Block. It's called The Truth About Gender IQ Differences. It's an intellectual takeout. Let me give you Walter Block's byline. Walter Block is an economics professor at Loyola University and a Mises Institute senior fellow. Okay, Mises Institute, I get articles from all the time. I know a couple of those folks. They're at Auburn. is where the Mises University is located. So they're outside D.C. They're not part of the you know, the Beltway Bandits. He says he's the author of several classic books on libertarian ethics, including Defending the Undefendable. Well, to read that one. And was named one of the 100 most influential philosophers in the world by academicinfluence.com. I wonder if I'll get that title one day. Gene, you think I could ever be one of the 100 most influential philosophers? I'm just laughing.
Anything is possible. Anything is possible.
Thanks for your support, Gene. Okay. You might. I think we need to get you a little closer to your microphone there. I think it was just a touch quiet. But I'm always trying for, you know, volume equity here. Volume equity is where Gene and I speak at the same level, but it goes back and forth. It's just kind of weird. All right. So the article says, in all the brouhaha about diversity, equity, inclusion, social justice, and woke politics, the fact that there are real observable differences between the sexes is often overlooked. At least he says sexes and not genders. He knows what he's talking about. This is particularly the case when it comes to the intelligence quotient, or IQ, which has suffered all kinds of things. I mean, I should try one of those tests sometime. He says everything else under the sun has been mentioned over and over again as an explanation for why there is a disparity between gender groups in terms of their employment in the STEM field. That would be science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. That's STEM, that's the acronym. Computer science, business entrepreneurship, wealth creation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Intelligence doesn't get talked about often due to the controversial nature of the topic, which is, of course, why it interested me, right? Okay. Richard Herrnstein, that's H-E-R-R-N-S-T-E-I-N, Richard Herrnstein and Charles Murray, to be sure, in their 1994 book, The Bell Curve, Intelligence and Class Structure in American Life. Oh, I bet that's fascinating reading. More than just discussed IQ. But what we see, what happened to the latter, I guess one of them passed away in 1994, the former, obviously the latter, the former, you know, anyway, he has become a persona non grata pretty much everywhere that counts, hounded from college campuses, reviled by Hollywood, the pulpit, major newspapers, and mass media. Well, that's because he said there were differences between the sexes and how they think. You know, I guess that's controversial. In fact, I'm sure it is. But, you know, in this land of equity where we're all equal, we're not. It doesn't mean better or worse. It just means we're not equal. Anyway, so the article says, but one can't understand the truth about gender differences without understanding the role of intelligence. And Gene, if you want to stop me at any time, feel free. Otherwise, I'm going to plow through this with my own comments, then we can kind of hash this out. So I'm really curious what you think. Anyway, looks like we've got another caller too, so I'll take a look at it. So area code 602, hang in there for a bit. Let me get through the article and I'll take a look because I don't recognize that number, so I might be a new caller. Anyway, as groups, men and women have virtually the same average IQs, but the standard deviations are wildly different. I say, wait, let me just do one thing real quick. I mean, hold on just for a second. I want to check something just to see if Yeah, don't mind me. I'm just playing with my thing. I forgot to put my guest phone numbers where they're supposed to be, which is like right up at the top of the page.
It was an amazing article because, you know, men and women are alike in a lot of ways, but we really are different in a lot of ways too.
Yeah. Well, okay, it's not Chappie calling in. Chappie said he might have called in. So let me just see if I – I'm going to do a quick search here. Okay, this is a new caller. So new caller, hang in there. I will get to you, but I want to get through this first here because this is kind of interesting stuff. So thanks for calling, first of all. All right, so as groups, men and women have virtually the same average IQs, okay, but their standard deviations are wildly different. Females are clustered towards the mean, which means the middle, the average, while males are spread out all over the entire spectrum. I found this fascinating, right? Plenty of men are located within one or two standard deviations of the mean, having average intelligence. That's what the mean is. Okay, so mean is average. That's C on the bell curve, okay? So having average intelligence, but quite a few, too, are located above or below the 3 and even 4 standard deviation level. Gee, maybe I'm not sure what that means, but I'm sure you can tell me, but I'm sure that's a lot. All right. This is meaning there are more outlier males who are quite smart and more who are, as they say, not so much. Right. Females tend more toward the average of their gender. It is the rare female who escapes the gravity of the mean. So to put this in simple, sort of like non-scientific language, men are can be anywhere from extremely intelligent to extremely stupid, you know, or somewhere in the middle. Women are much more in the middle and don't have as many that are extremely intelligent or extremely stupid. I find that fascinating. Anyway, he says, this is why we find it far more men than women who are homeless or living in mental institutions and jails. Okay, that makes sense, right? But a similar phenomenon prevails, too, at the other end of the distribution. Women are far less proportionately represented than men amongst Nobel laureates in physics, chemistry, and economics. Far fewer women than men receive the Fields Medal in mathematics, and far fewer become chess grandmasters, presidents, or prime ministers, Baroque composers, top surgeons, and lawyers. There are some who have broken past this glass ceiling, Marie Curie, Margaret Thatcher, Golda Meir, but they are few and far between. This will sound horrible to many. It implies that young women are consigned to lives of professional mediocrity. But the logical implication is not that no females can rise to the top of their callings. It is rather that fewer of them will be able to do so compared to their male counterparts. Jean, have you ever heard this before? This is
no,
new to me.
And the interesting thing is, I think you can look at studies, but I think there's, you know, for so many years, guys were, you know, became doctors. I mean, years ago, 40, mm-hmm. 50 years ago, there were some females, but not a whole lot. Even like scientists, not a whole lot back then. And so I think as time goes by, there will be more females in those roles. There will be more females winning, you know, like the Nobel Peace Prize. But even in math, for so many years, girls were told, oh, boys are good in math. You know, girls aren't so good in math. And so what does that do? That instills in a girl, a lot of them, and I know girls, some of females that are fabulous in math.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like, I think if we, instead of looking at things like gender, I think if we could just encourage people to do the best they can, we'd see a lot more differences. But also, I wonder, when you talk a lot about homeless people and people in jail for the men, when you go 2 standard deviations, sometimes they're below 2 standard deviations. Those guys are the ones usually, if you look at a cognitive chart, those are with the lower IQs are going down lower. And so sometimes they're at more of a disadvantage. Why? Because it's harder for them to get jobs and stuff like that. And sometimes, unfortunately, people like that sometimes will follow a crowd. So if they're told to do something, they may do it, regardless of really if they understand it's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. You know, you made 2 really good points here. And it's interesting that one of the reasons men, I think, are more on the street than women, there are more services for women. You know, especially like single mothers. I mean, how many services are there for single fathers? How many battered men's shelters are there? The services are just simply not there. So that might be a reason more men are on the street. But there are simply more men on the street. There are more men committing suicide. But
yeah,
it's interesting.
Exactly.
The object of me bringing this up this morning is to take those things out of the equation. If you take out the sexism that existed for women for almost the entire history of women, you know, where you were told, you know, school teacher, nurse, and what was the other occupation women had? Those were like 3 things that, you know, in the 50s that women did. And that was about it.
You
know, school teacher, nurse, and there was like 1 other. Secretary.
Secretary.
Yeah,
secretary.
So those are your choices. Secretary, nurse, or a school teacher. Okay? Well, that's insane. Okay? So we can't my object this morning is to take those things out. So if you take out the sexism against women, if you take out the lack of services for guys, if you take out all of these extraneous factors that we bring into society, or the expectation that men should be good in math. I suck at math. I mean, truly suck at math, okay? But I'm not stupid, all right? So there's something else going on here. So all of us are different individually. But when you start studying these things, the trick is to study it without the prejudice, without the leftist, you know, bias, without the, you know, you can't make pancakes if you're black because you've got an Aunt Jemima problem, like we talked about earlier. If we can get away from that and just let's do actual IQ tests and test the means, I think this is fascinating. And Carl, I'm going to get you, like I say, so hang in there for a little bit. Let me hold right here. Let me try this, because normally Gene would talk to you first, but Gene's on the phone right now, so I'm going to take a chance. And if you mess up, you're gone, because I already got your number. So let's try our new caller here, and welcome to Action Radio. So is that enough qualifications before I let you talk? Good morning.
Oh, yeah, good morning. How you doing, Mr. Gray? This is Pastor Don, Junior, CEO with the winning team.
How
did Sunny,
Arizona? Change numbers all the time. That's what it is. You're changing numbers all the time.
Man, I'm moving, man. 1,000 miles a minute.
Okay.
1,000. I'm calling all my people. Come in, man. It's a great show.
Well, thank you. So, what do you think of our article so far?
I think it's a really dope topic because it's a lot of dual standards out there. And men, we might run the world, but women fix our world to make sure that we're able to run the world. Now, I'm not saying I'm male chauvinistic where I don't want a woman cooking in the kitchen, but at the same time, I don't know what before it actually happens.
I like cooking in the kitchen. I make my own food. I mean, you know, I'm a simple guy. I got to do all my own stuff, you know, all those domestic things. Doesn't bother me. I'd rather. All right. Hang on for a second. I want to get to this article, and then we can talk, because you might have a really interesting perspective on this, so I'm glad you're here. Yeah, we should have talked sooner, so this is good. All right. So, and this article talks about exactly what we just talked about. It says differences such as these are often chalked up to cultural sexism, but the reality is that such imbalance is most likely biological. It is almost as if men are nature's crapshoot, while women are assigned to the role of insurance. I think it's a great way to put it. Consider the biological role of women to give birth and what it would have done to the population throughout history if the grouping of women around the mean were reversed. The population would be in trouble. More women at the extreme low end of the IQ curve would mean more that are not capable of bringing the next generation. They would have been too busy occupying the mental institutions' jails or living homeless on the street. More genius women on the extreme high end of the IQ would mean more drawn into demanding professions and less available for motherhood. That may be a sexist view in itself, but it's simply a biological reality that women have kids and men don't. The question of who takes care of the kids and raises them, I still think that's an equal proposition. But in terms of biology, yeah, without women, we're not going to get kids in the world. It's just that simple. We all die out. Without men, too, by the way, yeah, but it's a different thing. Anyway, back to the article. It says, suppose that what I've said about male versus female IQ distribution is correct. Is it better, here's a question for both of you, is it better to share this information with women so they are cognizant of it, or to keep it from them by canceling all who espouse it and to let women continue to think they are kept out of top jobs because of sexism? At present, we seem to be adopting the latter course of action. Gene, what do you think? Is it knowing this, does this change your view? Do you think there might be less sexism because women are not in more in top positions? Or do you think that still predominates? How does this knowledge that there are actual measured differences that women's IQ centers more around mean, around an average, and men's are both at the top and the bottom of the scale? We're nature's crapshoot. I found that fascinating. Gene?
Yeah, well, I think, except when you get into the government, otherwise, I do think a lot of people get their jobs based on qualification. In the government, it's who you know and who you schmooze up to. And if once you get started, it's how confident you are. You pretty much can keep it if you keep schmoozing up to the right people. Whereas, you know, and not to say that there's some people in the regular sector that don't get a job if you're female, but I think in the regular sector, sometimes they look at, I want to say race. I mean, if you're white, if you're like what I do as a therapist, one time when you're a guy, you may get a job before a female because there's not as many men in occupational therapy. And it's like, that's just how it is. But it's interesting. But the thing is, I think more people really do get the job based on their qualifications. And I could be just living in a bubble, but I really believe that, male or female.
Well, see, I think there would be more opportunities for females, especially in education, you know, in therapy and psychology and special education, things like that. I think those jobs females would be preferred, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but no, education, they actually love males. Because a lot of, especially elementary school, these kids love a male role model. Oh, that's fabulous.
Okay.
It can be fabulous.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I think there should be more men in schools. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But the thing is, too, it's really sad because sometimes, you know, it's not who you, what you are, it's who you are, regardless where you, what job you're going to. You know, if someone knows someone, you may have a better up than someone else. But also one thing about females that I have to say, and I've heard it, that females, not my age, but younger, when they're in child-rearing ages, sometimes for more management roles, they may be passed on. Why? Because the employer may look at them, ooh, they want to have children, and that means they may have to take time off. They may call in sick more because their kid is sick, that type of thing. Is that fair? No, but, I mean, that happens too. I know that.
Yeah, and that's just a reality, and there's no reason to deny women having kids simply to get a good career. So that has to be accounted for somehow. But on the other hand, I wouldn't want to force women to be engineers on a quota system if not that many women wanted to be engineers, simply because, you know, the mind is oriented in different ways. I don't know. Most guys can't be engineers. I mean, it's a tough profession. There are more guys than women in engineering, because it seems to be the upper side of the intelligent males go for things like engineering. Pastor Don, I'll get to you in just a second. Yeah, go ahead, Gene.
I was going to say, that said, as people may hate me for this, and I don't care. This is my experience over 30 years, and then, well, way over 30 years in the medical field, that female bosses can be horrible to work with at times. And sometimes, oh, no, that's not true. I find in the medical field, a lot of them, oh, my God, it can be catty. It can be play favorites. It's crazy how it is. I've had so many more better male bosses than female bosses. And unfortunately, people may say the same thing for me when I was in management. I kind of let people know what I think. But, you know, sometimes I also did what I was made to say from the higher up. Because sometimes when you're in management, you think, oh, you have all the, can call all the shots. No, depending on the management you're in, sometimes if you're just the manager of a certain department, you have to do the higher up, how would you say, dirty work. So they can look like a rose, smell like a rose, but actually they're the ones that are mandating things, and you can't let the people know they're the ones that are making you do what you're doing. And you can say, well, you can always not do it. Well, that's true, and then you're out of a job.
Interesting. I got some questions on that too. Pastor Don, there's not a lot of women I know that are pastors, especially, you know, when it comes to, you know, more visible pastors, entertainer folks or folks that, you know, have large churches or things like that. It's usually men. So it looks to me. What do you think? I know he's there. Are you on another call? You're live on my line. Okay, we'll get back to him in a minute. Gene, the other
mic
question.
Mic check. I'm right here.
Oh, there you are. Good. Okay, now you're back. Yeah, unmute. Okay.
Yeah.
So
and
women and women
is
pastors.
An oxymoron.
What's that?
Yeah. Well, the lady who ordained me to be a pastor, she's a female. So I believe women are more in tune to the spirit of God than more so than men, but men are more vocal about it.
Well, that's interesting. So if you're more in tune with the spirit, what? Go ahead, Gene.
I was just gonna say I'm not that well versed in the Bible. So what does the Bible say about men versus women? Because, and the reason I say that, I grew up Catholic, and anybody that knows, you know, any Catholic, it's like priests are always male.
Correct. You're definitely right about that. Well, back in the early biblical times, women shouldn't be seen, not heard. And then as the Me Too movement and all these other moves came out, women have more of a voice. And we as a people, we're more organized with the social media. We're listening to everybody's perspective as opposed to making our own conclusion and making that law. So I feel like women have a very viable emphasis in the church as well as men. But for us, for the topic of discussion today, men are normally hired in positions of power because they're men, not because they're qualified, just because they're men.
Yeah, see, I don't think that's true. It's true as much anymore, because you may be hired and for a position, but you're not going to maintain it. You know, it's going to come to a point where you're going to be challenged. But I find, well, let me give you another interesting thing here. Talking about the balance, we're always trying to balance things out. We're trying for equity. This is the big term that's out there now. We have to have as many women and men in engineering, which seems to be my favorite subject, you know, here, because that would be equitable. That would be, you know, even though not as many women want to be engineers. But that doesn't matter, because we have to have equity. We have to have representation. So the article goes on to say, unlike the West, the Chinese aren't burdened by woke theories of gender imbalances caused by alleged sexism. We are. Therefore, weakening ourselves in competition with them if we continue promoting these ideas. Furthermore, if there must be 50% of females in the America's laboratories to ensure fairness, instead of this proportion being determined on the basis of merit, accomplishments, and skill, then our quest to cure COVID, cancer, and other such diseases will become just that much more unlikely. It says, if young girls are acquainted with these biological facts, they will be less likely to blame their lack of equal success with males on systemic sexism. According to that famous aphorism, the truth shall set you free. Maybe so, maybe not. Regardless, the original goal of science is to move us that proverbial 1/1,000,000th of an inch closer to the truth with a capital T, regardless of threats from snowflake wokesters. I like that line. The credo of physicians is first do no harm. The equivalent for intellectuals would be first tell the truth. So if the truth is that women are more centered, in other words, there are fewer women at the lower end of the intellectual scale, but there are fewer at the top end of the intellectual scale. Women are more gathered towards the center, and men are more spread out. If that's true, as this author says, and taking all other factors aside, then you would see different patterns. If that's the case, you would see different patterns. You would see, like they said before, there'd be more men would be the top men. So in other words, men competing against men, if you've got more men at the dumb end of the scale, you've got fewer opportunities for men. So this is, if you want to look at this in terms of sexism, this is sexism in a lot of ways. Because if more women are average, those more women in the average intelligence level are going to be out-compete more men at the dumber end. And I'm being really blunt, I probably shouldn't say dumber end, but at the lower end of the intellectual scale. So this isn't necessarily sexist against women. It's just providing information. So how does that present itself? Let's go. Let me go, Pastor Don, then back to Gene. Pastor Don, what do you think?
I agree with you, because at the end of the day, you don't want anybody putting in your roof. They'll have the proper degrees and the history of learning. If they're not educated enough, I don't want you on top of my roof, because my house is going to cave in. That's what I feel.
Yeah. Gene?
I agree.
Yeah, you don't want a pilot that's an idiot. You don't want a woman who's a bad pilot being promoted simply because they're a woman, which the airlines seem to be doing. That's why I picked that out. But Gene, were you and I talking about this yesterday? That the best flight crew is actually one man and one woman because of the way that we think and the way that we act. Was I talking to you about that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Pastor Don, just to get you caught up, we were talking about this yesterday because I used to teach flying, and I taught a lot of women how to fly. Disproportionate to the numbers of women in aviation. It's like aviation women are like 5% and almost half my students were women. But what I found interesting was that the women learned faster, trusted more, and put into practice what I talked about. The guys thought they knew best. They were arrogant. But the guys would gut out situations longer. They would reach for the solution. They wouldn't give up as quickly as women did. Women would ask for help a lot sooner. So in that respect, I was thinking that the best flight crew would be a man and a woman. A woman to listen to the tower and get the communications right. guys are arrogantly, going to do what they want. And it's like, no, you got to follow the clearance, right? Whereas the guy would, when it hits the fan, would struggle more, would fight more to, do a life-saving thing and say, we're on our own. We got to fix this, kind of thing. And it's just, and I don't think those, I'm not being critical of men or women, in that, I'm just saying that we have different talents, different abilities, different skills. Our brains are wired differently. And so why not take advantage of that? Why not have people in positions where they can do the greatest good and the most good for who they are? Take the most intelligent people, put them at the top. But it seems like it's a
subconscious thing, though. I got to say this. I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's a subconscious thing. And the way we've been raised, men always know. Your father, the car break down, you inside the road. Instead of calling the AAA, your father's after 4 or 5 hours trying to figure out what's wrong with the car. Now, a woman, she's going to immediately call AAA.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Men don't ask for directions. Men don't call AAA. I did. It's funny. I would try and fix something just because I like the challenge. But if it was a time constraint or if I was out on an open road, I'd call AAA because I'm not stupid. Gene, what do you think? Do you know guys that would never ask for directions?
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. Or if they won't ask for directions, but you know what? If you're lost or you need directions, they'll make the female go in and get the directions. But they won't do it.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, don't
why
know
is
why,
that? But... That's hysterical.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we pretty well – do you guys have any comments on this? Because we've got about 9 minutes left, actually, if you want to just kind of open it up to general discussion. Any more comments on this?
I think the big thing is, because I look at engineers, and they're saying, engineers, regardless if you're male or female, it's so interesting. Right. It's like a lot of different professions. Those people that are engineers that I know, they have the same type of, oh, my God, just focus. And I don't want to say attention, but just hard time. I mean, focus on one thing at a time and just real meticulous about certain things. Not everyone, but I'd say 95% of the engineers I know. drives me nuts because I'm so opposite of that. But the thing is, I think if for anybody, if we can help them find what they're good at and acknowledge what they're good at and steer them in those directions, because that, you know, that's what we need, and that and help build it. And if they don't have the same, how'd you say, skill level, sometimes you can teach it. And so just encourage that as well. But I think male, female, I don't think it's as big a deal as we just need to get people to do what they what brings joy. And regardless of the paycheck, too, because I think so many times, depending on who you are, it's like if you don't make a good paycheck, well, that means what you do is no good. Heck, you know, we need good people that are chefs, waitresses, people that work in stores, cashiers. I mean, it's amazing when you go to the grocery store, so I don't like to go to checkouts that I have to do myself. You go to one that's very fast and efficient, and one that's friendly. You go to the bank, or God forbid, the motor vehicle place, and they're actually friendly. It's like, wow. That's a bonus. And so I think regardless of what you do, do the best you can and flaunt your the things you're good at.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I want to get back to what you said earlier. We got another caller, and I'll get to 317 area code. I'll put you on in just a second. You're a new caller, too. So we got two. We got to, well, Pastor John, I don't have that particular number. You're always calling from a different number, so I didn't recognize it. I try and keep track of all the folks that call. And that's okay. You can call from any number you want. You know, I know who you are, so it's good. It's good to have you on. But Gene was talking about women like to work for male bosses, because women working for women bosses, there's a competition amongst women that I find fascinating. Guys, we don't have that. We're much more team-oriented. We're more, you know, because we grew up in the Boy Scouts. We play team sports. You know, we're used to working as a team more. Women are much more individual. You all dress differently in school when you're kids, you know, so you can impress the other women. Guys don't care. We all wear jeans and T-shirts, and we don't care, right? So we're much more used to a uniform, you know, cooperative existence, I think. And women who are supposed to be more cooperative, I think, are actually more competitive when it comes to, you know, looking better than the next woman. I don't know. I think I've worked for men bosses. I've worked for women bosses. Women bosses can be a pain sometimes, but I've had some fabulous women bosses too, so I don't think it's quite the same. I think there's more conflict between women working for women bosses than there is men working for women bosses or women working for men bosses. I think we do better when we mix the genders. The more we mix our gender or more we mix the sexes, the better off we are because of our different qualities. Gene, what do you think? And then we'll get to looks like we got Pianki in the line. I'll get him on the line here too, and then we'll get a new caller.
Gene,
what do you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'll let you talk to the others.
Okay, let's get Pianki's on the line. Hold on, Pianki, just a second. Let me get our new caller here. And the rules are very simple. Gene would normally talk to you first, but I'm going to take a chance on you, so don't abuse the privilege. Welcome to Action Radio. 317 area code, you're on. Oh, I think we might have a listener. Going once, going twice. I'll put you back on hold. Okay, if you want to listen, that's fine. All right, this is a talk show. And so if you want to listen, the best thing to do is listen at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. I'll come back to you in a little bit. We've only got about 5 minutes left. Pianki. Good morning, sir. What would you like to add to our discussion?
You know, one telltale is when you look at the Nobel Peace Prize winner.
That was in the article. Yeah, before you got here, they talked about that.
Yeah, and the categories at the end. And, you know, I know that when it comes down to Black Peace Prize, Blacks are present in the peace. And I think you have one for literature, and that's Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. But in the other areas like mathematics, chemistry, physics, and so forth, they're not present. And look at the difference between United States and, say, China.
Well, this doesn't break it down. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. Well, here's what's interesting is that now they didn't break this down by race, which I think that would really have been controversial. I mean, it's controversial enough, you know. They're breaking it down by sex, and I'm sure this author got a lot of criticism, but it's very interesting. If the assumption is true that men have a much wider distribution of intelligence, you've got, you know, a whole lot of really smart men and a whole lot of really, you know, lower intelligence men, that we cover a broader spectrum and more women are gathered around the mean, that makes a huge difference. Now, if they broke it down by race, I'd be curious, you know, to do that, but that would make it really controversial. I bet you find it's pretty much the same. I think men are consistent, you know, across the racial barrier, you know, given common experience and common education and something else. But, you know, in the same country, like Black men in America, white men in America, Asian men in America, unless the kids, you know, unless you have parents that are really helping out, you know, but given an equal experience, you know, I don't think you're going to find any racial difference whatsoever. But I'd be curious if someone actually tried to measure that, given the history of trying to prove that, you know, black people are less intelligent than white people, which is a horrible thing to try and do. But are there legitimate racial differences, not necessarily in intelligence, but in areas of intelligence? You know, verbal versus math, for example. I don't know if that's
well, in areas there are. In areas there are. You just talk. You just reporting what it really is.
Okay.
You know, people seem to get all tied up and bunched up the way things are reported, but you can only report what it is. You go to the doctor, they're going to measure your blood sugar, they're going to measure your weight, they're going to measure your blood pressure,
right.
And they're going to come back and tell you what it is. Now, you might not like to hear it, or you can work to change it.
Yeah, considering this week, yeah, exactly. Pastor Don, what do you think? Bring it back in the conversation.
I think you guys are on something very true.
Okay.
It's strange how it works, but I feel like this is a very sexist society. You can do as we say, but not as we do. And the bottom line is if a woman comes to get a job and a man is buying for the same job, they can have the same resume, but because it's a man, 9 times out of 10, he's going to get the job. So
well, let's pick a job.
You live in a biased society.
Pick a job. Pick a job that you think that would be biased toward. Let's pick a job. Let's take different jobs. And we got about.
What about mechanic? Like
mechanic. All right, auto mechanic.
If a woman
fills
out applications, she got degrees. She goes to the Drippy Lube. They gonna hire Joe Snowblow, who's around the corner, because he's a grease tree mechanic. They like he's better because he looks the part. It's a perception of the reality.
What if the woman is smaller and can get into more tight spaces, you know, and be a better mechanic for the modern computerized engineering stuff, and she's got more qualifications? Why would you not pick the woman for that job?
Because she's a woman. I don't work in the mechanic field, but I'm saying just for the other mechanic that's actually out there on the dock, they would just pick her because she's a woman. So it's a duality there. You know, some people, they pick what looks good, but it's not good for them.
Uh-huh. Would you rather have a male nurse or a female nurse, Pastor Don?
I don't care. I've seen a lot of nurses this year. I want somebody to save my life.
Okay, makes sense. Gene, Pianchi, you guys want to get in on this? Pick a profession. Because certain, you know, we have expectations for certain professions. What's that?
Iron workers.
Okay.
No women, especially the structural.
Hey, wait a minute. I saw Fame. There was a welder. And she was totally hot, and a dancer too. Okay, so why can't women? So why can't a totally hot woman be a welder and a dancer? That makes perfect sense to me. You know, I mean, I'm a dorky guy who writes legislation and started a radio show. A woman could have done this.
Well, if you as far as structure steel erector, you probably wouldn't see one female in that profession.
Doing what? And which one? Ironwork.
Erecting structure steel, working 300 feet off the ground.
Why not?
You rather stay
women
on
have
the ground,
better balance? Wait a minute, Gene. Don't women have better balance and a lower center of gravity?
And I think there are more construction workers getting to become women. Why? Because of some of the TV programs. But I did know a female that owned a construction company in New York on Long Island, but I can't really say she owned it. She took it over from her father. So, I mean, she did own it and run it, but he started it.
Well, just to let you know, I'm the first white guy to start Action Radio, okay? So the next person that comes along, they can get credit for it, too, for joining in. But, you know, because you know, everybody's announcing, that, well, the first black person did this or the first Asian did this. Well, I just want to say the first, you know, I'm the first white guy to start Action Radio. Anyway, on that note, we've got like 10 seconds left, so we'll pick it up again Monday. So we're going to be broadcasting all week. Next Friday is our anniversary show, December 24th. And Pastor Don, call more often. It's good to have you on. Pianchi, thank you.
Hey,
Gene,
man,
thank you, and,
good to be back.
Well, good. As long as you're free more often. Pick a different number next time. Greg,
I will.
There we go. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And, of course, you can pick us up Monday morning at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. And if you can't get those times, just catch us on podcast. And we'll be back Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Have a great day.